gentlemen, welcome to Aerial Helwani's MMA Show!
Back in your life on this Monday, December 24, 2018. Hello again, everyone, and a happy holidays to you. I'm Ariel Helwani. It's the holiday season. It's a festive time. It's a great time to be alive. And as you may know, historically, on this program that we like to do every Monday, around the holiday season, we do a best of show. We celebrate the year that was, and what a year it was for us. Wow, a year to remember. Of course, this year I changed jobs, but the train just kept rolling along. We missed 1 week in between the switch. We were back. Our first show in our new home was June 25th, and we haven't missed a week since. And I gotta say, past 6 months, they have been a whirlwind. I can't believe it's December 24th. I can't believe 2018 is almost over. And we have had a who's who. I would say that in the 9 years that we've been doing this show, the past 6 months have probably been our best stretch, if I can humbly say that, our best stretch in terms of guests. I mean, it's been a who's who every week, one stack lineup after the next. It's been a lot of fun, and I appreciate everyone that's followed us to our new home. I appreciate all the positive comments. I appreciate all the patience. I appreciate all the encouragement. It has been a year to remember. And so on this particular episode of the show, we are going to look back at the past 6 months. It is going to be a best of show. And let me just tell you about some of the names that you'll be hearing and seeing on this best of show. Names like Daniel Cormier, Tyron Woodley, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Max Holloway, Henry Cejudo, Rose Namajunas, Aleemelem McFarlane. What do all those people have in common? They're all champions. Speaking of champions, we'll also hear from John Jones, Fyodor Emelianenko, Anderson Silva, Chuck Liddell, Rampage Jackson, Matt Hughes, Oscar De La Hoya, Tony McGregor, and his son, Conor McGregor, who of course made his return to the program right before his fight against Khabib Nurmagomedov. George St. Pierre stopped by, Israel Adesanya, Brian Ortega. Like I said, it's been a very busy six-month stretch. A who's who has stopped by. So enjoy that. Perhaps you're having some eggnog right now. Perhaps you're surrounded by some family that you don't really want to interact with. Pop on the best of show. If you missed anything over the past 6 months, this is a great way to catch up. And let me remind you, my friends, before we get the show rolling here, in exactly 7 days, December 31st, we are back with another live show, but it is our most special show to date. December 31st, my friends, live on ESPN2, we are going prime time. We will be on ESPN2 on December 31st, New Year's Eve, from 9 p.m. Eastern Time to 12 a.m. Eastern Time. We will be counting down to the new year, 2019. We will also be counting down to the new era of the UFC going to its new home, ESPN. And perhaps most importantly, we will be recapping the entire year that was. We'll be giving out awards like we do every single year. Fighter of the year, male and female. Knockout of the year, submission of the year, fight of the year, round of the year, walkout of the year, poster of the year. All those and many more. I think there's 20 in total. And we'll also be looking ahead to what should be a very exciting 2019. So that's in exactly 7 days. Primetime, ESPN2, our best of 2018, our look back in terms of awards and whatnot, and also previewing. This is great. You're bored of all the New Year's shows, right? You're bored of those. Come hang with me on New Year's Eve and some of my friends as we'll be giving out awards on ESPN2. That's television. That's the actual tube. This is a big deal. We're all grown up. For now, though, enjoy our best of show. It has been a great time. I appreciate everyone once again. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the 2018 Best of Poker. Our old friend Thug Rose Namajunas is joining us. There she is. Rose, hey. How are you?
Hey. I'm good. How are you?
I'm really happy that you're here. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. This is our first episode for ESPN. You've been a part of the shows in the past, so it meant a lot that you would come on today. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Where are you right now?
Congratulations,
bud. Oh, I think I just saw Pat Barry's luscious legs.
he just walked by.
Are you guys working in the garden? What are we doing today on this Monday? Hey Pat,
what up, man?
How are you?
Doing great, bro. You look great, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you. What's on tap? A lot of gardening today?
Yeah, garden as always. And then just like, you know, just making some adulting, I guess. Hold on 1 second. I'll show you. Yeah, we had, adulting things.
Adulting things?
But, yeah, let me see. You know, taxes and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, that's not fun.
Paying bills.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if I could turn it around, but.
What do you got?
You can't really see it.
What was it?
Some tomatoes.
Oh.
Another tomato, some peppers, and I'm trying to show it without breaking my back, but yeah.
That's
tomato
amazing.
Plants, and then our neighbors got some too. Because we inspired them to grow some stuff too.
Do you eat from your own garden?
Yeah. Occasionally. It's still pretty early, you know, like I think the first day of summer just happened, so there's still, you know, everything's still growing, but we've had a few, like, you know, pieces of, like, lettucey greens and whatnot, and we have this lemon tree here. It's a little baby right now. I just pruned it.
Wow.
So, I'm trying to grow that. We got this serviceberry bush over here.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so I just had some berries and stuff.
I'm not the greatest bantamweight of all time, despite my injuries. I'm the greatest bantamweight of all time because of my injuries.
Mm.
That's it. It's that simple. And you are the best journalist in this sport because of the things that you've been through that were supposed to end you. And that's why you're the best at this, Ariel. And we are no different. We're cut from that cloth. You either quit when it's all over, where everybody else holds you to that standard for you. But that's everybody else's vision for you. So you can stop there at their vision for you, or you can create your own. And I always choose my own vision because my vision is bigger than just me. And everybody else's vision for everybody else's vision for me is what they want, not what I want for everybody else in the world. And what you got to understand is me getting through this is bigger than me. And you getting through that was bigger than you as well, because without you, the MMA athletes don't get their word out right. I have to only thank you for this platform that you've created, because now I get to get this out all in one go, and I don't have to send out 35 tweets, and I don't have to do 25 interviews. I can do one and done because of the platform you built, because you didn't quit, and you got a bigger job than ever from a job that was actually limiting you at a certain point, from what I've heard from you. So what was actually the end of your career turned into the beginning of the biggest career you ever had. Is there ever a possibility that everything that we think we know is actually just a limiting belief? Is there a possibility that everything that our brain is a dry erase board, and everything we've learned up to this point is a limiting belief because we believe we know it already? A true master knows nothing. A true martial artist knows nothing. A true martial artist never stops learning. So they're always in the question. And it's no different in life. Everything that I think I've learned in life is it's a limiting belief once I set to it and I stick to that's what I know. So I've erased my board. I'm a blank slate. And this is now, that makes this situation a brand new opportunity to create endless possibilities. And so as I move forward with a new mindset, an empty mind, a clear mind, I mean, this can be whatever I want it to be because I have no limiting beliefs of what this should be. However, everybody else has a limiting belief of what this should be because they have their opinion, but they're only looking at it through the lens of their own life. And so it's my job to give them a new lens by doing it and being it so that people can see it get done.
How are you feeling right now, Matt? How would you describe how you're feeling?
I'm 90%. My balance isn't the best, but I can live with that. I don't fall, but I just, if someone pushes me, I could stumble easy.
Have the doctors told you that you will improve even more, or or are they saying that this, you know, 90% is unbelievable considering what you've overcome? Is this how good that it's going to get for you?
I just keep thinking I'm going to get better. To me, those doctors don't know Matthews.
Right. I would imagine early on there were doctors who told you that you would never get anywhere close to this, right?
Yes. I think the doctors were surprised I walked out of the hospital.
Was there fear early on that you wouldn't be able to at all?
I think the doctors didn't put any faith in me.
Is that the kind of thing that, given how, you know, competitive you are, given your background as an athlete, as a high-level athlete, as a champion, did that almost fuel you and give you more motivation to try to get back to 100%?
Definitely. I always fought best when I was the underdog.
You told your captain, your head coach, Eric Albarracin, you told him at UFC 177 when you couldn't fight, when you failed to make weight, that you were done, that you were going to quit MMA?
Yeah. I told him. I remember telling Sean Shelby, and I saw Sean in the back, and I'm just like, hey, Sean, this has gone full circle, man. Do you remember when I first told you that I'm done fighting? And, you know, I couldn't make the weight. I was embarrassed with myself. I was embarrassed with everything that happened. And I remember telling him, like, hey, I appreciate the UFC for everything. It's too bad I'll never fight for you guys, but I'm just done, man. I'm done fighting. I can't make the weight. And I remember, I remember Eric, you know, he was down there with me, Sean Shelby, and my brother. And I remember Eric, like, following me. He's like, dude, you can still do it. You can still do it. He was trying to get me to go back in there and try to make the weight or try to fight, try to do a catch weight. But by that time, Eric, I was so embarrassed. I just didn't want to fight because, you know, there's articles done. Well, so who will make weight before my debut, man? This is a lot of pressure for a kid. I was 26 years old, and I remember jumping in the car, and Eric was trying to open the car door, and I'm over here like fighting with him and closing it, and I'm over here cussing at him, and he's like, "You can still do it." He's like, "You're the best in the world. You're the best in the world." That people don't know that. I says, "Henry, you're the best in the world," and I'm just like, "Leave me, leave me." And I remember just closing the door on him, and then heading to the airport. But I remember just feeling this like complete sadness, knowing that Eric was right. You know, me still knowing at that time, being dehydrated, hearing his words and me shutting the door on him, headed straight to the airport, me knowing, like, man, this guy is right. This guy is so right. I'm super emotional right now, but this guy is so right. And I stuck to it. I came back. I took some time off, and I think it was 5 months later, I ended up fighting Phoenix, my debut in Phoenix. And then from there was history. From there was history, Eric. And I think you need guys like that. You need coaches, because a coach is not just a technical or tactical coach. A coach is somebody that could just help you out in life. And if it wasn't for his words of encouragement, letting me know that I'm the best in the world, I mean, I probably wouldn't be here, Eric.
You're okay with the decision to remove you from the card? You feel like it was the right choice?
You know, if you ask Fighter Max, I would say no. You know, you know, if you ask Fighter Max, I would say definitely no. But if you look at through my eyes, as a coach, as a friend, as a mom, as a parent, as a father, you know, say I go, I make the walk. This is one of the toughest things that they worked out to me. You know, say I go, I make the walk. Everything is good. You know, I take a little bit of damage in there in the fight. We celebrate, we win. I go to sleep that night, I don't wake up the next day. You know, that shit, that hit me tough when they told me that. And it's crazy, you know, it's crazy. Because it's crazy to think you can be here one day and then be gone the next, you know. So that hit me hard, you know, when they said that. But, you know, Fighter Max, I wanted to go to the end, you know. But these guys, that's why I got a team. That's why I got a team behind me. They're always going to try and look out for the best for me. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think so. They made the right decision.
It's been a long year, man. It started off great, and it was going in the right direction. And it's still going in the right direction. But I feel like I have been left without action, though, you know? We trained, we fought Frankie, and after that we got ready for or we stepped in on short notice for Khabib, and that didn't happen. And then we got ready for Max, and then that didn't happen. Then I just kept training, and then now we're fast forward. It's almost pretty much been a year. And it's been a year where we just have been training nonstop, kind of with no, like I said, no end goal, kind of as in terms of security, right? Is there going to be a fight? Is he going to show up? Is he not going to show up? All these rumors that spread out, you know, after he couldn't make weight or whatever happened. And we just got kind of left on pause. And we've been training hard, but we haven't, like I said, barely finally now, December, we get to fight and find out what I'm made out of, which is something we've been trying to find out. And I feel the entire team is tired. The entire team wants to finally just say, hey, let's get this fight done with. And let's just enjoy our life a little bit. Because a lot of people are sacrificing a lot for this. My boxing coach, my friends, everyone's sacrificing their time of their life. And it's been a year now. And I've sacrificed my entire year. I have not celebrated my birthday. I didn't celebrate anything, man. I haven't celebrated Thanksgiving. I haven't celebrated, you name it. I haven't lived an actual kind of regular life in a year. I've just been kind of nonstop, just training for whatever happens. It was like whether I can get in on a short notice fight, whether it was a Khabib fight or a Khabib and Conor fight, or it was training for my fight. And now we're just kind of finally here, and we're knocking on wood that this just pulls through.
Do you feel like you're in the right space mentally heading into this title fight on Saturday?
I feel like I'm in the right state. I feel like I kind of emotionally detached myself from it, and then went more into just this kind of beast mode to just go in there and just fight at all costs, no matter who it is.
Okay, so you broke your arm against Jessica Rose Clark in January, correct?
Yes.
What happened there, and then what went wrong with the first surgery?
So the first surgery, they don't really know exactly what went wrong. They went in, they put a plate in, and they put a bunch of screws in, and then 6 months went by, and my arm never healed. So I had a broken arm for the last, 6 months.
Oh, my.
So they're basically call it what's called a non-union. Then they had to go in, take the old plate out, put a new one in. It's much bigger. So if you've seen the pictures, it runs from my elbow to my wrist. And then they took a bone graft from my hip and filled the crack. So, and then put a bunch of pressure on it. So hoping that this one actually heals. So I don't have a broken arm for my whole life.
Yeah. And for those 6 months, was it in a lot of pain because it just wasn't healing?
It definitely hurt. I wouldn't say it was a lot of pain. It hurt. I mean, my arm was broken for 6 months. So different movements hurt it. I was still able to use it pretty minimally. But for the last 6-7 months, I've only had one hand. So I'm getting really good at my left hand, though, which is a benefit.
That is a benefit, especially in basketball. Do you play basketball a lot?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. So it doesn't help. And will you have, the scar, what will it look like? Because that thing is gigantic. That, I mean, not to harp on it, but it, I mean, it's a very long scar. It's a very long incision.
It's huge, but luckily the doctor was amazing, and he really sutured it up really well, so I don't think the scar is going to be anything crazy. I have a scar on my hip, too, which I didn't realize that when they take a bone graft, I have, this long of a scar on my hip,
wow.
So that's kind of something else, but I guess it's all a part of the fight game, and I earned that scar.
Yeah. What was it like actually fighting? So how many minutes do you think you actually fought with a broken arm against Jessica?
I don't even know. I think the instant when I really was in the most pain, I guess, is that I felt it break when I threw the punch. I knew I broke it. But when she was trying to armbar me and she had me in a triangle, trying to fight out of an armbar and triangle, and she was armbaring my already broken arm.
Oh my.
So playing that mind game of should I tap, knowing how much pain I was in, not knowing if it was going to get worse or anything like that, but also being really stubborn and not wanting to give up. That's when I was like, all right, this hurts.
Have you ever felt anything like that before in a fight?
No, never. I've never been hurt that significantly in a fight. So it was definitely the biggest injury that I've sustained while inside of a fight.
Afterwards, are you thinking to yourself, why the hell am I doing this? I could do so much more with my life. This is just not worth it.
No, I didn't. After the fight, I was just mad. I was embarrassed. You know, I felt like even without the broken arm, I put on an awful performance, which really was frustrating for me because I felt like everything went right going into the fight, and that normally doesn't happen for me. So I was just embarrassed more than anything, and I was embarrassed my arm broke, embarrassed I was the reason it broke, and then embarrassed by my performance. But I definitely, the road to recovery has been really long, but I know I'll be back in there, and I know the plan still is, me and my manager's already talking to opponents to fight somebody the end of the year.
The UFC said on Friday via a report in ESPN that they will no longer announce sort of provisional suspensions, that they will let the process play out before announcing a fighter's fate, unlike what they've done in the past. Yet in this case, you came out and broke the news yourself and have been very open, and I think you deserve a lot of credit for that. Why did you decide to make that choice? Why did you announce it?
I was going back and forth with, you know, my team, and I was talking, and I was like, you know, I got a lot of advice not to, they're like, this could be career suicide, kind of. I mean, like, there's no need for you to release this. People are going to talk bad. And I just had that, I had this guilty feeling in my stomach not telling the fans why I'm not fighting. No one knew. No one was releasing that I wasn't fighting. So I felt the need, and I'm not worried about, I don't know. I don't feel too worried about people thinking I'm on steroids or that I'm trying to cheat. It's just not me. And I feel like, I don't know. I feel like the fans and everyone, they know that deep down that I'm not trying to cheat. And I wasn't, I don't know. It's still kind of, I felt weird posting it. It just sucks, man. It feels, I'm kind of speechless. It feels like it's all kind of it's not even real life. I never thought I could see myself in this position where I'm in a case like this, but.
Do you hold any animosity towards Dana White or the UFC?
You know, I really don't. You know, if anything, it helped elevate me as well. I wasn't put on a platform that I wouldn't have been on anywhere else. You know, there was, you know. So I have nothing against them. I do have a problem, per se, with the way they treat their athletes. You know, I mean, like, the way they treated me. Well, I think, like, Tom Lawler recently got, like, let go after serving as USADA suspension or something like that. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of things I see that the UFC does that they do that aren't ethical, but they do it for money and things like that. And I'm just not a big fan of, like, poor ethics, you know, in life. So, like, and that'd be my only complaint with Dana White or the UFC. It's like, you know, I wish you guys took care of your athletes a little better and, you know, did the right thing more often as you can.
Do you still watch the sport?
You know, I do watch it occasionally. The more I watch it, though, the more it's looking like WWE and NXT, though. Khabib jumping over cages and eagle kicking people and all the trash talk. And it's pretty, sometimes it's hard to watch. It's not what it was like when I was in the UFC. I feel like the fighters had a lot more respect for one another, and everybody wasn't trying to wear a suit and big time everybody. Like, they're like, there's a lot of handshaking, a lot of bowing. Some people had beats, of course. But I don't know. I felt like it wasn't so much of a show. It was more real, you know, when I was there.
When you look back on it all, is it with fondness? Are you happy you did all this? Are you happy you took this chance? Are you happy you stepped foot in there? Can you look back, you know, even though they both didn't go your way, can you look back with pride and with a silver lining?
Without a doubt, yeah. There's absolutely no shame in taking a chance in your life, and I took a big chance, you know. And I feel like even speaking about this now, like we are, I feel like there's finality to it. But I don't want anybody to jump to conclusions and start making headlines. I got to talk to Duke. I got to get back to training, and I plan on doing that as soon as I wrap on this movie. But yeah, I look back at all of it. Actually, you know what? I did know it was the 2-year anniversary because my jiu-jitsu coach posted a picture on Instagram, and I, you know, it made me smile. So yeah, I look back on all this stuff, and I was very fondly.
And so, okay, that was really interesting what you said. You're not done. You want to keep fighting.
I think so. Yeah, I'm not ruling it out, but I'm also not, you know, throwing my name in a hat right away.
Okay, so you're leaving the door open.
Yes, door's open. All right.
Is there a deadline as to when you'd like to decide, or you're just taking opportunities as they come?
I'm taking opportunities as they come, and if there's a deadline, it's probably before the end of the year. But like I said, you know, I've been talking to Duke, and, you know, he's just like, let me know when you're coming back, and we'll talk about what's in your future. And that's my plan, is to talk to him.
Have you talked to Dana White or the UFC about your future?
I've talked to UFC personnel about going out to Vegas to see the old, what is it, Performance Institute.
Yes.
I have not spoken to Dana in a couple months.
Okay, so if it's not in the UFC, is it UFC or bust for you? Or if an opportunity arises outside, would you be willing to do that?
I don't think it's UFC or bust, but I'm definitely in a weird position. You know what I mean? Like, whereas there's other places out there, but it's just like, would I go? Should I go? Deserves got nothing to do with it, but it's really just kind of like, I still look at it like everything, the world's my oyster, and, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be able to kind of pick and choose. I'll be the first to admit, you know me, I'm brutally honest, probably doesn't make a lot of sense for me to fight in UFC again, but we'll have to wait and see what happens.
What was it like in between the first and second round? Because at that moment, now you have a second to catch your breath, and you're probably feeling this way. Was there any part of you that didn't want to go back out there?
Well, I knew that I was going to lose the fight.
Wow.
But I could just tell. I during the fight, I felt frozen. I felt like everything was underwater. All my footwork, all my punching, I couldn't gauge anything. Everything in my mind was slow. Like, it was just a big, there was no fire. There was no passion to make me want to fight hard. There was really nothing. So I pretty much knew it was finished. And it was a matter of time.
Did you say that to your coaches?
No, I just, you know, I mean, I just went back out there and, you know, you've seen what happened.
At any point in the training camp, did you tell your coaches how you were feeling?
No, but I think they felt it too. They seen how I was training, and they seen the intensity. It's not the same as my regular demeanor and my passion leading up to a fight.
Have you ever felt anything even remotely close to this before?
I mean, I've been unmotivated for fights and pushed through it and won fights, but no, not really. I felt a little bit like it was the worst I felt in going into a fight.
Wow. And do you have like an actual theory as to why? Like, now, can you look back and pinpoint an incident that happened, a moment that happened in the build up to this fight that made you feel this way?
Well, I think it was a mental decision to just be comfortable, and, you know, and to just stay in my comfort zone and train the way I felt like it, and train when I wanted to train and do what I wanted to do and not push. And I stayed busy and I trained. I was in decent shape, but I mean, when there's no fire and there's no pushing out of your comfort zone, you can't. It's not how I'm used to getting ready for fights, you know?
This was the first time that you were entering a fight as a champion of a major organization. Do you feel like that played a part?
No. I definitely didn't fight like a champion. I didn't have a champion's mindset for this fight. But, you know, it was a big kick in the ass, that's for sure. So sometimes you just need that in life, a big wake-up call.
And why I bring up the belt is almost not so much because you're fighting as a champion or not, but maybe you're like feeling yourself. You're a little too overconfident. You're resting on your laurels. Oh, I won the belt. You know, that sort of thing. Does that come into play?
You know, I wouldn't say that I'm too overconfident. Maybe the fact that I won my world championship, you know, is something I set out for when I was little. And I finally got it. Maybe it made me comfortable to just, I did it. Now I can relax a little bit. But I coddled that feeling for a little too long, you know?
What was it like when you went back to the locker room? Now the reality is sinking in that this was maybe one of the biggest fights of your career. And you, as you say, you got too comfortable, that you didn't push yourself as much.
Well, I was just, you know, I was upset with myself. I was upset that I had to see my wife upset and my coaches disappointed. And like, I was very disappointed in myself, and I didn't like the feeling at all. I mean, I could deal with losing a fight and knowing that I pushed hard and I fought hard, but there's nothing worse than getting beaten up, knowing you didn't even give the guy everything you got. So that sucked.
This might be an impossible question to ask, but just or to answer, but just like, would you say you were at 50% in that entire fight, including training camp? Were you at 60%? Is it even possible to put a number? Just curious, because I have to be honest, I did not expect you to say this, and I've been doing this for a very long time, and you don't often hear fighters at your level speak like this. So it's fascinating on this end to hear this kind of honesty.
Well, I don't think I could put a percentage on it. I wasn't into it. I didn't really have any desire to fight hard, you know? I just kind of showed up. So, you know.
Do you think that you will be able to regain that passion and that motivation?
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, you know, it was a big wake-up call for me. And I've gotten to understand what I did wrong, and I think I'm pretty good at that. When I learn from my mistakes pretty well, and I'm working on some things to make some changes and make sure I don't fall into the same decisions and mindset.
A lot of fighters, they have other things in their life. I've got nothing else in my life apart from fighting. I don't live for anything on a day-to-day basis. The only thing I do have to look forward to is fighting, and as I say, mate, I've set out to be the best, and I can't stop until I achieve that. So to lose in such a way, you know, I wouldn't have mattered, mate, if I would have lost a fight on a 5-round war, but it's just the fashion in what I lost. It really did hurt me, and I'm not afraid to say that. You know, I cried. I felt embarrassed to look some people in the eye, because I know that people depended on me, but at the end of the day, mate, it's me stepping in there. It's not someone else, you know, doing all that. The torture we go through as fighters. You know, I say it openly, mate, I don't think there's anyone out there. I think there's very few fighters that work as hard as I work under my coach, Colin, the regime I go through with him. I really do pull everything I've got into it. So to lose that way, yeah, of course, I went back to the change room after all the interviews and cried my eyes out. You cried like a baby, but the day after, I was like, okay, you've lost the fight. Let's just get on with life. It's not the end of the world.
Congratulations on the win. This must feel good on a Monday, right? You haven't felt this feeling in over 2 years.
For 2 years?
It's been 2 years since you won a fight.
That's been a long time, yeah. Yeah, it does feel good. I didn't think it was that long, but yeah, it's definitely been feeling that way, and I'm just glad it's finally here.
I forgot
what it felt like.
Yeah, well, that was actually my next question. I'm surprised you don't remember how long, because I would think that that's something you think about, like, oh, the Valerie fight, I need to get back on track, but you're not the kind of person who harps on that?
Sorry?
I said I'm surprised that you didn't remember that it had been 2 years, that you were surprised by that number. I would be the kind of person who would harp, oh man, it's been 2 years since I won, but I'm happy to hear that you're not the kind of person that harps on that.
Yeah, just, like, I knew, like, I lost, like, those two fights, but there's been so much happening in the past few years, and yeah, I guess I've just not really concentrated on it, and I don't see, those are on my records, but I feel like I've had so much more stuff going on that I've failed at or lost at in life, and yeah, so thanks for reminding me, Ariel.
No problem. I don't mean to harp on it, but because you won, I feel like we can talk about it, and the emotion that you showed afterwards was amazing. I don't know if you can even rank that, but have you ever been that happy after a fight before? It seemed like you almost didn't even know what to do with yourself. You were so happy.
I was just, yeah, I was so happy, and just, it feels good not going home with a loser's check,
yeah.
Half a check, you know, and all the hard work and all the heartbreak and just everything that's went on, it's just a relief off your shoulders. And like, the both of us were going in there and both on two losing streaks, and everyone's days are numbered now, so it was just good to go in there and finish and know that I'll at least get another fight.
This is how I've been brought up,
okay,
by my mother and father. Is you don't run away from anything. Do you know what I mean? Why people don't talk before a fight is because they're scared of the big fall. They don't put themselves up here because they're going, but if I say I'm the greatest ever and I get beat, then that's a big fall. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not scared of that. I'm not scared of that one bit. So I take it all in. I take it on the chin and I move on. There's nothing to be ashamed of. There's nothing. I got beat. It wasn't my day. I'm only 21 years old. I'm going to have many, many, many more days. I'm in this game for life. I started it when I was 13. You know what I'm saying? I'm in this game for life. I'm not just lost isn't going to pit me off or, do you know what I mean? I'm going to go into my next fight, talk the same game that I always talk, and go in there and do my thing. It's just how I've been brought up. You take what you're given. And Friday night, I was given a loss. I'm going to take it. And I'm going to move on from it and work on it.
When's the last time you lost?
When I was 15 years old.
Wow.
It's the last time I've been beat in any form of competition.
What kind of competition?
MMA.
MMA. Yeah. How'd you lose?
Decision.
Decision.
Yeah.
How old was the opponent?
He was about 3 or 4 years older than me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was it like a close fight? Was it a robbery? Were you dominated?
He beat me fair and square.
Have you ever been knocked out?
No. First time.
What's that like?
Yeah, it sucks. It's not nice.
Yeah.
It's not nice. Getting beaten in any form isn't nice. It was devastating. It was absolutely devastating. I went into my dressing room and I cried my heart out.
Okay.
I'm not ashamed of it. So no, it's not nice. It's the worst feeling in the world. I fucking hated every bit of it. But I look back, I've watched the fight about 500 times.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Start to finish?
Start to finish, the whole thing. And I hold my head high. The work that I'd done to get there, how I conducted myself, how I went out, how I fought, how I went about everything. I'm a very proud man. I'm a very proud man. No one will take that away from me. No matter what people say, I'm proud of myself. And I've got stuff to work on. And I'm a man on a mission now. I've got a fire in my belly. And I'm coming for everyone. I'm coming for the whole division.
This time next year, are you the champion at 185?
Yeah, I would have defended it probably maybe once.
You think so?
Yeah.
Is Kelvin going to drop out and you're going to get... Like, what are you foreseeing?
Player one, do your thing. Player one, do your thing. Let me look into my crystal ball for a little bit and I'll see.
Okay, but honestly, but this time next year, you
I got the belt.
You have the belt.
After 2-2-1, I'm going to repost this clip. I'm ahead of the game. After 2-2-1, we're in the green room and some guy was walking around with the belt. I was like, ooh, let me see that. And I felt the weight of it. I remember that moment. I felt the weight of it. And I remember just touching it and feeling it and just like looking at it. And I took like a little video with it. And I just, that was my debut in February. And I remember just holding it like, I'm there right now. I can feel it. I remember that. It was on this shoulder too. Yeah. Oh, I twitched. Holy
wow.
That's crazy. I twitched. Bro, I'm deep, man. People don't understand the power of this thing, man. It's levels. I swear to God. I open my third eye, bro. It's levels to this.
Just do me a favor.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like very soon you are going to be on a different level. Don't forget about us little people. Bring the elevator back down.
What's your name?
I've seen it time and again.
Amen.
It's cool for you to come now, but in a year you're like,
I'm out.
Who's this guy?
I'm already
again?
Blowing you off now.
Yeah. Thank God for Ash. Now it's like 5 days. Soon it's going to be 10 days between responses. Then no response.
Oh, no.
Change your number. One big topic that has come up lately is who's the greatest ever. There's Fedor, of course, there's you, there's Demetrius Johnson, Daniel Cormier, John Jones, George St. Pierre. Who's your vote? Who is the greatest ever now?
You know, it's very tough for me for talking about that because, in my opinion, BJ Penn is the best fight here, you know? That's my opinion.
BJ Penn, still to this day, you say he's the GOAT. He's the number one, pound for pound.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. BJ Penn is the best. BJ inspired me a lot, you know, and it's very interesting because one day I just look at BJ fight and say one day I go fight the same BJ Penn, you know, and BJ is my hero inside the cage.
Have you seen this young man named Israel Adesanya? A lot of people say he fights a lot like you, kind of a hybrid of you and John Jones. Have you seen him, and are you impressed with him?
You know, in this morning, people talking about this boy, you know, it's very interesting. His new generation, his new talent, you know, and yeah, it's the new future, you know, it's have the new talent come, and maybe this boy is incredible fighter, I don't know, but Dmitry Dronson is great, you know, have a new talent come.
You, Anderson Silva, we just spoke to him before, George St. Pierre, John Jones, Demetrius Johnson, Daniel Cormier. Who's the best ever? Who's the best?
Ты, Андерсон Силва.
Из них? Ну, они же тоже все, все разные бойцы. И каждый оставил свой след в истории ММА. Я бы, ну, как можно выделять? Ну, все по-своему интересны, все, у всех есть своя изюминка, наверное, так.
He said they're all different fighters, and he feels like every one of them has left their footprint in the history of MMA. You know, they each had something unique about them that captured our attention.
Is a part of you a little upset that you never got to fight him?
Yeah, man, absolutely. Especially when all the hype was behind him, you know, him being the pound-for-pound greatest fighter in the world. That's who I wanted to fight, you know, and now I'm fighting a guy that did beat him, you know, a cool one. So I want to continue to grow my legacy. I believe I'm the best fighter on this earth right now, you know, and by doing what I'm doing right now is going to continue to prove it, be able to have the belt and blow the weight class, and be able to be professional and drop the weight. You know, man, I don't cut any corners. I feel like I do everything right. You know, I'm working hard. I'm always on my diet. It's more of a lifestyle than a diet. Of course, I'm disappointed it's not Demetrius Johnson. But look, man, I get to beat a gold medalist, and I'm going to beat him at his own game, too. I'll go out there and I'll wrestle him. So he should bring that gold medal to the octagon as well so I can take his belt and his gold medal.
I love this. Between the both of you, this has been a great start to the build to this fight. This is great. He told us that essentially, you know, the plan is he fights you, beats you. I know you disagree with that. And then he'll get an immediate rematch at 135. Have you been told that as well?
No, I got no plans of that because there's not going to be any losing. You know, I mean, there's no plans in that whatsoever. It's going to be me shutting him down and proving that I'm the best fighter.
And I'm sure you can imagine a lot of the 135ers are mad that they're not getting their shot. We just spoke to one, Marlon Moraes. What do you say to those guys who are worried now that it might be a year before they get a crack at your belt?
It won't be a year, man. I'm always active. But stay ready all the time, you know? I mean, keep proving yourself. He's still got a fight. I think Dominic Cruz has still got a fight to really prove who's the number one contender. I've heard some rumors of Cruz fighting Lineker on the card, so I obviously have some beef with that guy that I need to finish as well, too. So, you know, that's the way this game goes. Continue to prove yourself. I've had to do it. Everyone's had to work their way up. You don't just get a shot, you know? So keep working and keep proving yourself.
Would you have accepted this fight if it was Henry going up to fight for your belt?
I already did.
Oh.
It wasn't me. Like I said, Henry's the one that's scared. I was told that they wanted him to come 35s and fight him, and then he started probably giving them some headaches. And so, like, you know what, Dillashaw, you ain't giving us no headaches. You're not scared of no one. Go down there, close the division out, take the belt, and we'll take care of you. So that's the plan.
Okay, you watch him, you know, do these interviews, photos, all that stuff and more. He's holding your belt. Does that not feel weird a little bit?
No, it does. I got three belts downstairs in the closet.
Wait, what? What was that?
I said, no, dog. I got three belts downstairs in the closet.
I know, but that's you were the guy. You were the only guy. And now there's someone else parading.
No, I said, no. It's called reality, man. Like, I knew, like, my day was going to come. That's just a sheer reality of the sport of mixed martial arts. Every great champion lost. I mean, GSP, you lost to Matt Serra. You know, Anderson Silva lost to Chris Weidman. Lakers lost. And I can just go down the list of the best champions in mixed martial arts who should be in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion, have lost. And so for me, you know, I look at every single person that's lost as a champion.
like Ronda, O'Connor, Ben Henderson, Frankie Edgar, Jose Aldo, Henry Brown, TJ Dillashaw, Dominic Cruz. I can go off the list. I've been there when they've all lost. Every single one of them have lost, and I've still been the champion. And I sit there and I take something from those guys, and I see like how them losing affects them. And I look and I'm like, that's not going to happen to me. I'm not going to let this belt dictate what I do in life and who I am in life, right? This is basically a token of me being the best martial artist, but it's not who Demetrius Johnson is. It doesn't display what my skill set or what my passion is for mixed martial arts. Like, that was just something that came down the road. You know, I talk about it all the time, like, man, you know, what should I do if I want to get the UFC and I want to be mixed martial artist? Like, one, that's the wrong way to look at it, my personal opinion, because when I started doing mixed martial arts, it was never to be a world champion. It was never to be in the UFC. This didn't even exist. You know, the lowest weight class I had was 155. Then it got rid of it. Then it went to 170. So for me, I look at it as that I'm passionate about learning mixed martial arts, and this is where my path is taking me. Just because I lost the belt doesn't mean, you know, my path is going to stop. I'm going to continue my journey to keep getting better, and that's it. So I don't let that, you know, see another dude. I mean, sure, let me know. Here we could, you know, defend his belt two times, and I come back and beat him, or I can, you know, go in there and fight him for a third time, and I can lose again. And let you know he fights Joseph, and Joseph beats him, then I come back and beat Joseph, and I get the belt. Then here, there's just so much that can happen. So for me to sit here and, you know, mope and groan and see, you know, another man with my belt, not if it's my wife, I'm over the, you know, the Glock and take care of some things. But that's not the case.
My deal single-handedly should change the pay structure of almost every fighter. It should. And it should bring awareness to free agency, period. That don't re-sign a deal. I mean, what especially – it's not worth not risking. The raise that you're given at the end of your contract is not worth not being a free agent.
Mm.
The value of a free agent, it's super undervalued by fighters. I don't think they understand what's out there. They just see what the guy who's doesn't have a great contract on the right or left of them, they're comparing it to an already not that good of a contract.
Mm.
And they're saying, all right, well, I'm getting a little more than him, so I'm just going to re-sign. Or I'm getting a little more than him. The truth is, it's everyone's severely underpaid. And until you get to a free agency, you know, just like you do in a cage, put your cup in, put in your mouthpiece, grab your balls, and test free agency. I don't know, like, you'll be shocked and surprised how many people need you.
If you sign a contract, should it be honored? You know, like you sign... You can't back out of the contract if you sign, right?
I tell you honestly, like, yeah, and like, this is what happened to Diaz, and when Diaz said that he didn't want to fight, Poirier, he said that he signed the agreement, you know, and he must do this.
Yeah.
But week after, the same thing happened to me,
yeah.
But on like 180 degrees, like different, you know, on the other side, you know. So you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It happened to me. What happened to the UFC after Diaz said that he was not going to fight? So I felt a little bit sad about this. That, you know, they went through this situation and they put me in this spot. You know, and I'm not only a fighter. I did. I'm still doing lots of good things for this company. But at the end, you know, I'm fighting. So I'm very happy and thankful to all of them, to the UFC that they put me back.
Did you ever say that to them in all of this?
I believe that after the fight, I will sit with Dana and talk a little bit about it, you know.
About what happened?
I used to take fights, like, in short notice, but not this time. The belt is on the scale, and I wanna win this, you know.
Hmm.
I wanna be the best shape ever and get this belt.
Ronda did a lot for women's MMA inside the UFC. But outside the UFC, when she just started fighting, I mean, the world champion. You know, she did a lot of inside women's MMA inside the UFC. Outside, have a lot of girls start before me. And then I was a champion already. And I don't know. No, she don't fight anymore. She's going to do WWE, you know. She
And then I don't have to say anything. I just have to sit down and watch, you know, the best fighter in the world, pound for pound, you know. And then she's lost from Holly Holm after 1 year, lost from Amanda Nunes. And then, you know, I don't need to touch her for this to happen. I just have to watch. And, you know, in timing, everything show up. You know, everything show up. The truth come out. When you know, you have to sit down, have patience, wait.
Are you still thinking about boxing?
Of course. You know, I think it, you know, I think it's my dream, make one boxing fight. I think it'll be perfect. And I think I can do great. You know, I think my fans would like to watch. They would love to watch. Of course, I have to be my great opponent, too. And, you know, I like to challenge myself. I think, you know, if you have the opportunity, for sure, I would like to do it.
I had Chris Cyborg on the show last week, and I asked her about you. And she kind of no-sold you. She was kind of like, eh.
I know.
You sense that from her? Like, she doesn't want to give you any props?
Why would she? I'm, like, the biggest threat she has.
But, I mean, she's been around for 10-plus years. You've been around for half a year. Like, she should be that... You should be so far in her rearview mirror.
Yeah.
You don't feel like that's the case?
I just think it's funny. Like, she... Something happened where she was like, who is she or something? And but she follows me on Instagram. She follows me on Twitter. She follows me on every social media outlet. And then the other thing that I had a little bit of issue with was she said, oh, she knows where I am. You know, she knows where to find me if she can make 145. And I think that's so funny because what did she hate on Ronda about all those years? Ronda always said, she has to come down to me. She has to come down to me. I'm the champ. She has to come down to me. And now she's saying the same thing. That's so funny to me. But I will. I'll cut down to 145 if that's what she wants. I don't care.
You could do it.
Absolutely. To prove a point, for sure I will.
Honestly, how far away do you think we are from this actually being a thing? Like, this actually being a She's about to become a free agent, too, which makes this super interesting. How far away, skill-wise, confidence-wise, do you think?
Well, I think it all depends on what happens with her and my teammate, you know?
Yeah.
I think, but March, her contract is up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to get another year of experience under my belt. I'm going to be 8-0. I'm going to, you know, success breeds success, and that really instills confidence in me. Every time I fight, I feel better and better and better and better. And not only that, but I'm training with the best girl in the world, you know? Amanda is a beast, grappling, striking, everywhere.
You train with her often?
Yeah, you know, she's starting to get ready, so she needs bigger girls, and she's one of the main reasons I moved to ATT, is to work with her. I mean, just like drilling, you know, combo for combo with her. It's amazing, you know? I guess it's just seeing the way she moves makes me move better, you know, makes me more comfortable, makes me more relaxed, makes me feel more confident in my striking. But to answer your question, I think a year from now, we got ourselves an exciting little, you know, I'll be 8-0, and I can say, let's do this.
So you think after that season, playoff, you'll be ready?
I almost didn't sign the contract, Ariel, because I didn't want Cyborg to retire and me not get a chance to fight her. That is why I almost didn't sign that contract, because I was like, if I sign with the PFL, I'm going to be with them for a year. I love them. I don't know are they going to sign Cyborg? Like, how's it going to work? What if she retires? But it doesn't matter. Even if she does retire, like, there'll be too much money involved. That fight will be way too exciting. She's going to come back.
Wow.
She's going to want to fight me.
Did you talk to anyone else?
No.
Just PFL?
Mm-hmm.
But this is your mission. You seem more set on getting this fight done than in our previous
sessions. Well, I mean, I realize that with or without Cyborg, I can be successful, but I don't want anyone to ever question.
But look, the thing is what I always wanted, and what I set off coming from Ireland to do, was to make sure that women's wrestling was the coolest thing on TV, right? And that people cared about it. And when you have a star like Ronda Rousey coming in, then it brings eyes, it brings attention. So for me, that was a case of, all right, this person is here, this world-class athlete, this champion, this Olympian is here. So now it's time to step up, right?
but show her who the man is, who the boss is, who runs this show, right? And so that's another opportunity to step up.
Now, I feel like the biggest fight, or one of the biggest fights that can happen right now in female boxing, is you versus Katie Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with me?
Yep.
How far away are we from this being a publisher? You're with different promoters, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Can this even happen? Do you foresee a time that this happens? Is it something that you want to see happen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. And it just needs to happen at the right time, because it would be a shame if the world wasn't watching.
Okay. So it's too soon now.
It's too soon now, because okay. I'm still able to make 130. She's fighting at 135. So yeah. I'm going to take the belts at 130, take that division while I still can. And then sometime next year, I'll move up to 135 and start fighting the girls there. And that's, I think it'll be great, because we'll both be champs.
Yeah.
Both have belts. But there's a lot of other girls too, you know, so we'll see. We'll see.
I'm not trying to disparage them, but I feel like that could be one of the biggest.
It is. It is definitely big. She has a huge following in Europe, huge following in Ireland. Top Rank has helped me build my following here in the United States, so I think it's going to be an exciting fight.
Did you watch her fight on Saturday?
I did.
You did? Okay, you made a point to watch it.
Yeah.
Conor McGregor was there in the front row. Do you see that?
Yep.
Who's in the front row supporting you? You need more love.
I know.
American fighters need to support you.
I know.
He's like pumping her up, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You need to get behind you. How many fights is your Top Rank deal for? How does that work?
Well, it's a 5-fight-a-year contract, but they're overdoing it. I mean,
okay.
I'm happy with it.
Okay.
It was 7 this last year, so.
How many years?
3 years.
So 1.5 or 1 and change is done.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean it's going to be the end. That was just what we started with. So.
Okay. But you can renegotiate in the middle?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They've got to start paying more.
We'll definitely renegotiate. I mean, they were taking a risk with me. Okay. Can we develop a market for women's boxing? But I know, my manager knows, my team knows that we will.
Yes.
And so we know what we're going to do, and I think they're starting to believe in me too. So
you will be Top Rank's Ronda Rousey. You will break down all those doors.
I've always said I wanted to be the Ronda Rousey of boxing.
You know,
she's done so much, and her success has crossed over into boxing, because like I said, when I sat down Top Rank, they see what, you know, Ronda and other girls, how they can be on big cards and headline fights and how it sells. So
this is a sport that I'm getting familiar with. I do have to say that in the beginning, I did criticize MMA. You know, and the truth of the matter is, because I did feel threatened. The fact that MMA has grown so much, the fact that the UFC has like taken over, basically, I felt a little threatened. So it was my mistake and my part to attack the MMA world. But let me tell you one thing, I respect it like there's no tomorrow. These fighters fight their heart off. These fighters are in there risking their lives, and I strongly feel that they deserve the best compensation that they can get hold of.
This is a fight I like. It's back, get me back in the sport. And I think the thing that getting back and getting ready to fight reminded me is that, you know what, I am going to open a gym after this. I am going to get back in, and I'm going to stay in the sport competing, at least as a coach, if nothing else. So, if nothing else, this whole journey has brought me back to my love of the sport and being in and around the sport. I missed it.
Is it fair to say that you're not just coming back for one fight?
We'll see. I mean, it depends on, I've told you before, I mean, it just depends on how I feel when I get out there actually fighting.
Okay, so right now you're taking
Right now I feel like yes. I feel like yes, but we'll see how I feel when the fight's over.
As far as with
I don't need to fight. I don't need to fight again. It is what it is. I'm going to do what my body tells me I can do.
My favorite moment is right before I come up from my crouch, and then it goes black. Not black to the point where I can't see no more, but where the person you're talking to now goes away, and that spirit that I have inside of me that loved to fight and had a lot of things that it was releasing. It got to release, you know, in that moment of fighting. And that was the thing about fighting. See, I'm not a fighter. I don't love to fight. what I love to do is I love to have that release where I never had like that in anything else in life, you know, and it was just a complete release. And I found that in fighting. And what makes me know that it's time for me to go is because now I found that release in just living. And I found a peace in myself that that I didn't have before.
There was a thought that obviously this was the opportunity for the Gracie family to show that jiu-jitsu was the dominant martial art. Did you not feel sort of the pressure of trying to represent your family on this stage against other martial artists? Like, you're the one who was picked. You're the guy. You have to go out there and actually prove what your ancestors, what your dad, what your brother has been saying for so long, that Brazilian jiu-jitsu is number one. You didn't feel that pressure?
I didn't feel the pressure. Because I trust the technique.
Did you realize from the first match that this was going to go your way, that you were just better than all these guys?
No, I didn't think that way.
No.
It was one match at a time.
Okay.
It was one fight at a time. I didn't think, okay, I got this. No, I never was that, okay, I'm confident. But I wasn't overconfident that, hey, it's a piece of cake. No. It's a fight. They always told me, if you take a hit, it's going to hurt. You're going to go down. These guys are hitting with no gloves. There's no time limit, so take your time.
You fought three times that night. Art Jimmerson, Ken Shamrock, of course, in the final against Gerard Gordeaux. Of those three fights, which is your favorite?
Oh, man, all three. Art Jimmerson, because those... a first time for everybody,
right?
So it wasn't just for him, for me too. That was my first professional fight. Ken Shamrock, because his physique, it was very impressive. He was probably the favorite to win the whole tournament. And the finals with Gerard Gordeaux, after what he did to the opponents, the guy showed up, stone cold face, just ready to go, broken hand, broken foot, looks like. I remember I stare him down, and I saw his hand was swollen, the foot was swollen. So I know that he was there to hurt me.
Did you have any injuries going into the final?
No.
Nothing?
No injuries.
And you left after the Gordeaux fight, no injuries, right?
No injuries.
That's unbelievable. That may be the craziest thing of all.
If you see the fight, I just didn't throw up that elbow. That's the specific way to throw an elbow, but I throw like five or something like that, you know, spinning back elbows. And I was looking for a special moment. You know, I was trying to make him come my way. You know, I was trying to fake him and make him react to see what he was doing. And I couldn't get him, you know, and until I finally see that moment at the end. And I just put all my faith on my body and on my technique, and, you know, it was there.
Who taught you that elbow?
Well, it's something that actually nobody told me, but it's something that I saw Cowboy doing in the box, and I started practicing it in the box and stuff, you know. And I'm telling you again, when I started training again in the Cowboys ranch, it's something that we were preparing, you know, the spinning back elbows, because we knew he opens up a lot with the punches. He always comes with hooks, and then sometimes he goes from the inside and stuff. You know, but I knew if I could get him to come my way and make him react to come my way and counter him with a kick in the middle, with a punch in the middle, with a knee, with a flying knee or whatever, you know, I knew that it was able to be there, you know. But the last second was perfect, you know, the momentum, everything was perfect. You know, I make him react as I wanted him to react the whole fight, you know, because I wanted him to react the whole fight like that. Sometimes when I want him to react that way, he was too aggressive that I couldn't counter. But at that moment specifically, you know, whenever he was tired, whenever I was really tired, whenever you think everything is over, that's when you kind of put your hands down, you know, and that's what happened.
So let us see this footage. We're gonna play some of it here that you provided. And before we play it, okay, it's starting right here. We can't pause. Okay, just pause for a quick second. I just want to ask, how did you get this footage?
So my friend Alex owns the barbershop.
Okay.
He provided the footage for me, and that's actually, it's called The Barbershop. He wanted me to give him a little shout-out.
Yeah.
So.
And where is it, in Queens?
Yeah, Astoria, Queens, on 21st Avenue between 31st Street and 29th Street, between 31st and 29th. It skips a block for some reason. I don't know why.
And you are coming out of the shop, or you were about to go in?
So I was there originally. We left and went across the street to a little diner on the corner.
Okay.
The family corner. We ate, and as we were walking back, that's when we saw the kid in the plaid shirt.
Yeah, okay, so we're looking at it right now. We're seeing you. Obviously, I recognize you. You got the beard. You're holding a cup of coffee or something in your hand, some kind of cup. There's the kid in the the plaid shirt, and then there's another guy that you're talking to. The other guy is your friend, right?
Yeah, Jeffrey Gallardo. He's a brown belt at Henzo's.
And you know the kid in the plaid shirt?
No, I've never met him. Jeff used to teach him jiu-jitsu right there in Astoria.
Okay.
He recognized him, and they started talking, and I was just standing there minding my business.
Okay. And then there's these two individuals. Don't play just yet. They're walking. These people you've never met before?
Never seen them in my life.
Okay. So it's we paused it right here. Guy in the blue shirt looks at one of them, and now you could play it.
Yeah,
boom.
Just
swing.
Face, yep.
Swings at him. And now you go after him.
Yep.
Knees. Clinch.
Knees, punches.
Now, can we pause for a second? Can we quickly pause? There you see the glass shatters, and that was you throwing him into the glass, right?
Well, Jeff and the other kid kind of bumped into us, and my shoulder, I remember, my shoulder bumped the glass, and I guess it felt like I hit like a sweet spot on a baseball bat, because the glass just shattered immediately.
Now, what's interesting about this is, I mean, it's a complete chaotic situation. It's madness. The kid in the blue shirt never engages and continues to walk back. Yet he was right. He was the one who was the catalyst in all of this.
Yes. And then if you play the video a little more, the kid that my friend Jeff is fighting drops his cell phone, and the kid in the plaid then proceeds to pick it up and run away with it like the piece of he is.
Wow. So there we see him going, bending down. Pause that. You see that right there? He went down. The camera panned, but he actually went down and picked it up. And then he's no longer there, right? He disappears.
And leaves me and Jeff to fight his battle. And these are the kind of people in Queens. this is typical New York for you right here.
Unbelievable. Now, do you know whatever happened to that guy?
I wish I knew, Ariel. I never saw him again. And of course, I had to be there to fight his battle. And
you have no idea. You never asked your friend. I want to play, if we could, I just want to play one more time to digest it, because there's a lot to unpack there. You have no idea where that kid is. Your friend doesn't know where that kid is. Nothing.
No, we never.
Here it is playing again. Now he actually spat at him.
Spits in his face, and then as he makes his way around him, he throws that slap or punch or whatever it was.
And it's the guy in the hood that spits, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Did the blue shirt guy, did he say anything to prompt the spit?
No, like, those guys just came really fast, and we were all talking, and then we didn't notice them until they were right up on us. So the kid spit in his face, made his way around him, and then he looked at him, and he just threw that strike. So then that's when it all went down. Unfortunately, as the video continues, they don't see me take my foe down and pound his face, and but he was crying a little bitch after that. He was all tough, and then I was on top of him, giving him what he deserved, and now all of a sudden he wasn't so tough anymore.
And
it was pretty funny.
And just so I have it clear, the phone that the kid in the blue shirt picked up, was that your friend's phone or the other guy's phone?
The other guy's phone.
Oh, okay.
It was great. So the kid, it was awesome. We're fighting his battle, and he gets away with the phone, and I walk away with 21 stitches.
And do you know whatever happened to those two other guys?
So, obviously, there was a huge commotion. People saw what had happened, and the police came. So, you know, the NYPD comes, and they ask us what happened. We go in the barbershop. We actually watched the footage right there with the cops.
Okay.
So, they were like, look, if you press charges, and we go look for these kids, what's more than likely going to happen is that they're going to say that you started with them first, and then even though we have the footage, we're going to have to arrest you also and then let the judge figure it all out. Even though you might not be guilty, but you're still going to have to go sit in jail for a night. Man, I've been to jail a little too many times, and the last thing I want to do, especially with that wound on my hand, was have to go sit in the 114th precinct. Then they would take me to bookings. Who knows? They might have brought me to Rikers. It's the last thing I want to do. So they were like, the cops were really cool. They were like, look, we could just make an accident report and say that you tripped and fell through the window, and we'll just leave it at that. So that's what we did. And I just didn't want to have to deal with lawyers and judges and cops. And so it was just wrong place, wrong time. But, of course, then I took a fight, and it led to my ultimate demise, I believe, that night in Austin.
How soon do you want to return?
Well, I could fight again soon if it's up to me.
Oh.
And actually, I have somebody in mind, too. That was going to be your next question, right?
Yeah. Well, I saw your tweet earlier today. Are you referring to the Black Beast?
The Hawk Balls. Let's go.
That's who you want. You want Derek Lewis.
Balls. Yeah.
How come?
I'm gonna be putting him away. Well, okay, he's a strong guy, but other than that, I'm not impressed by him. And, if I fight him, I'm going to put him away.
Wow, okay. So that's the one. Because you didn't say Derek Lewis on Saturday, but now that's who you want.
Well, Saturday, everything was fresh. That was number one. Number two, in America, press conferences are different.
Mm.
It's more America, one-liners, challengers, a little bit more. And in Asia, it's more respectful, and it's a different vibe. So there, I was definitely not going to challenge anybody. It was more about the respect. But since you're not Asian, right?
Right.
now we're back to business.
Okay. Ooh.
Looking ahead.
So Derek Lewis, that's the guy. Has he done something to bother you, or you just feel like it's a good matchup?
You know, his humor, I think, is stupid. Even though a lot of people are laughing about it, to me, it just doesn't make any sense. But also, I'm gonna take him out.
Okay.
If I fight, I'm gonna take him out.
So it's somewhat personal.
No, it's absolutely not personal. I've never had anything bad with him, but I'm just gonna take him out.
All right. I love it. Okay, let's go. And sooner rather than later, if possible.
Sooner rather than later. Yeah.
Alistair. It's good to have you back, my friend. I was happy for you, genuinely. Big win. People counting you out. I didn't count you out, by the way. I never jumped off the bandwagon.
You had a little doubt, though.
Never.
You had a little doubt.
Never. I'm a ride or die, Alistair. I am not going to jump off until this thing has no more wheels on it. One wheel left, I'm still there. I got your back.
I'm going to hold you to that, Ariel.
Always. Congratulations, my friend. Enjoy your time with your family. Enjoy the holidays, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you, as always, for coming on the show. It's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, baby. Carol, have a good one, and let's go. Hot balls, let's go.
All right. Thank you, Alistair. There he is, Alistair Overeem, coming off the big win over Sergey Pavlovich. And as he just said, he wants hot balls, Derek Lewis.
Yeah, I just put the drill bit, like, dangling right by my genitals. Like, just put it in, just like you would a gun, almost like a gangster.
Yeah.
A gun. I had my drill tucked, thinking I was gangster, and then my nuts got drilled up.
Is it even possible to describe what that felt like?
I mean, it was just so much pain at first, I couldn't move. And but luckily, the drill, it stopped. And if it would have kept going, I mean, I probably would have died, because I probably would have passed out, and it would ripped the testicle all the way off, probably both of them. But luckily, when I moved my hips back a little bit, and the tension on the trigger got released, so the drill stopped. And then that's when I decided the only thing I could do was reverse it.
Wow. And did you fall off the ladder?
No, luckily, I guess I got somewhat a good balance because I stayed on the ladder and then I dropped the board down, threw the drill down. It's like a $150 drill or something, but you know, when you're sitting there bleeding out, you don't even care. I just threw the drill down, threw the board down, you know, just got straight to the hospital. I thought I was going to pass out.
And do you have any idea why it turned on?
Just tension. And my, because the trigger, it has a safety, but, you know, I'm not smart enough to use it. but it has a reverse, a forward, and then in the middle, it locks in a safety for people like me that won't put it in a pit. And, you know, I didn't use the safety, so I pretty much deserved it.
Are you guys big Shania Twain fans? I love Shania Twain.
I love Shania Twain.
Man, you guys are the best. I love you guys.
Oh, you think you're a sea fighter?
That don't impress me much. That's how we're thinking backstage.
Oh, my God.
How to touch.
Yes. Now, don't get me wrong. Yeah, I think it's all right.
There you go. All
I'll right. Keep you up in the middle. Oh, man. That don't impress me much. Oh, this is great.
Yeah.
All right. But yeah. A fellow Canadian.
You're back on board.
All right. I did it. You know she's Canadian, right?
I think Celine Dion's Canadian.
Yes.
I heard that.
You seem to have an affinity for the Canadians. I like it. Yes.
Damn. All the hard music's coming from Canada.
Yeah.
Canada.
Canada. I got back with the Platinum Princess, bro. That's my baby.
I noticed.
I made it official with her, and, you know, this is a good place for me to be in life. With us together, I always do so much better, man. You know, it gets so messed up, all the things that people say and do. And I've made some mistakes since I've gotten, you know, a little famous. And we all make mistakes, bro. But you got to move forward. And I just follow life. You know what I'm saying? I let life go. That's why I'm not tripping about the armbar. I'm focused on it to get better at martial arts. I feel like martial arts is my path. So this was a part of my path, and it had to happen to me.
Wow. So you guys are back living together, you and the Platinum Princess. You're an item again.
Yeah, she's taking care of me, man. So I said that publicly so all these other girls can leave me alone.
Okay. You're off the market. You're unavailable. No more.
Unavailable.
When did that happen? And who reached out to who? You reached out to her or vice versa?
Man, we never left, man.
Okay.
We never left, man, really. She made it public, and now I'm making it unpublic. We both off the market. Leave us alone.
And did you do this? Did you rekindle it after the fight, or was it something that happened before the fight?
Before, during, and after.
All right. When you fight for Bellator, will you stop jiu-jitsu? Not training, but will you stop actively competing?
Well, you talked about something that was, you know, was interesting. You talked about the state of jiu-jitsu and where it's in now. And I think it's going to make that shift again. It's going to go back from everybody concerned about these super matches and these events.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I don't care about the rules.
Mm-hmm.
I just show up to give my best to myself and to the fans. That's what's important to me. In fact, I think the more that a competitor competes in all these different rule sets, he betters himself as a competitor and also gives the fans an opportunity to have some variety and otherwise uniformity. But it's going to make a shift from this professional scene, and these shows are going to die.
Oh.
They're not going to exist
anymore. So this is the right time to go over to mixed martial arts?
Well, I'm leaving jiu-jitsu to be a mixed martial artist.
Are you retiring from jiu-jitsu?
I'm not retiring from jiu-jitsu, but I'm not going to be in the scene as frequently.
You're taking
as I
a break.
Am. It's not a break.
A hiatus.
It's not a hiatus.
What
it's
is
I'm
it?
Taking jiu-jitsu and bringing it into MMA.
I got you. When do you think you'll debut?
I don't know. When do you want to see me debut?
January.
Who do you want to see me go against?
Dylan Danis.
You're a jerk. I want to go against you.
I don't think you
Come
can
on,
hang.
Let's move this table. I just gave you a rash guard.
Well, no, L.A.
Ask, call your son up and ask if you can wear it.
They're doing a show in L.A., so I figured
they are.
That's a backyard fight for you now in your adopted home state. So much hate. Does it ever get tiring?
I like it. It makes
you
it,
like it.
It's exciting, to be honest, because like you could be like Mighty Mouse, where no one really cares if you fight or not. You know what I mean? He's an amazing fighter. You know what I mean? As a mixed martial artist, but if you ask someone on the street, are you excited to see Mighty Mouse fight tonight? They're probably like, I don't know who that is. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, what scares me is to be someone that no one really has opinion about.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So either you hate me or you love me, you're still gonna watch me.
So you never have a moment where you're like, damn, can't these people just show me love? As long as they're talking about you, you're good.
Yeah, I don't really care. I don't really need
Why
love.
Why the jealousy? Know? Isn't the jealousy kind of like, doesn't it weigh on your shoulders a little bit?
But I feel like I asked for it. I taught the big game. I'm in the spotlight, you know, and all of them want to get their name out there a little bit more. They see a young, hungry guy coming up. They just want to, you know, I want to get their name. And whenever I have a beef with someone, it's always the head of the articles. It's always the headline.
Yes.
So, you know, they're just doing smart business. And at the end of the day, nothing is personal. It's all business.
What people are desperate for me to feel, and obviously it's MMA, like, and I can probably 99% certainly tell you that I'm going to lose. Do you know what I mean? Of course, because every fight I want to go into, I want to step up an opponent, so obviously I'm going to lose. I know I am, but like James was saying, it's how you pick yourself back up, and that's the way it is. You just got to dust yourself off,
yeah,
take it on the chin, and then go get back at it.
It's amazing, right? It's amazing that there are so many, especially, there were always, this idea of being sort of jealous or celebrating one's demise isn't a new phenomenon.
Nah.
This is human nature. But now with social media, it comes right to your phone, you see it.
It's so escalated now with social media. And obviously the whole world is on social media, so.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's people that are calling your names and stuff. And normally people that haven't even got a picture on their profile, fake profiles.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, I literally don't even have, like, very rarely use Twitter because it's just people have got nothing better to do.
Right.
Than it, like, comment on me life or me tattoos or me fighting or what. No matter what I do, people are going to have an opinion. So.
Ben Askren, that dude. So I said something to him too. I seen him.
Oh,
saw Ben, I saw Ben Askren backstage right after my fight.
Okay.
He was doing some kind of interview, and I was like, "What's up? Like, what's up? What's your problem?" He's like, "Why don't you focus on making weight?" I was like, "Why don't you mind your business?" And then I started to tell him some more. He's there with his wife and his or whoever that was, and he's trying to do his interview. But I said something to him too.
Really?
I'm not scared of nobody because what are you stepping to me for?
Right.
Like for what? You're not a troll. You're not a fan. You're a fighter. Like, you mad because I'm in the UFC? Because more people know about me and I'm my little four little fights? And you've been out here wrestling everybody to death for the last 20 years and nobody cares? Like, what are you stepping to me for?
Wow.
What? And so I came to him the way I came to you, the way I came to Joe. Like, what's up, man?
Yeah.
And he got all serious and puffed his chest out of me. I was like, fuck you, bro. Like, you're a 175-pound man. What you gonna do? You know, like, what you gonna do?
Do you think he crossed the line with his tweet?
I don't even know what his most recent tweet was.
He just keeps tweeting
about me. Mm. Like, how many tweets have you tweeted about me? Like, you were at the Worlds tweeting about me. What are you doing? You're trying to help me here.
He said I'd fight any welterweight in the world except Sejara Eubanks.
He said what?
He said, I'd fight any welterweight in the world except Sejara Eubanks.
Oh, because he's scared of me. Because he know I smack his ass. That's right. 170. I tell you what, I fought in the gi at 163. You put a gi on, I whooped that ass.
You think so?
Hell yeah. I'm nasty in the gi, man. Don't nobody know.
I'm coming out on fire. I called everyone out. All these punks been talking about me for years. They know what the truth is. They know they don't want to get in the cage with the funky one. And you know, this Joker, Jubun, I don't know how to say his damn name. He's a model. He needs to stick to that and stop trying to be a fighter. You know, he said, well, no one's scared of myself. Listen, there's not a tough guy on planet Earth that is not afraid of being emasculated by being held down against his will, being able to do nothing he wants to do for 25 minutes in front of millions of people on live television. That's about the worst thing that can happen to you, Ariel.
Okay, wow, you are coming out. You're coming out guns blazing again. Okay, let's take a deep breath here and let's take a step back.
Who do you want me to call out, Ariel?
I'll get to that.
Khabib, I'm the best grappler on planet Earth. Khabib, bring the heat. George, come out of retirement. Just tell me what I got to do, whether it's an amount of followers or beat someone up. You just name what I got to do, George, because you're not saying nothing. Diaz, you guys put down the pipe and long enough to pass you saw a test to get in the cage. Masvidal, you're a bum. Boom, roasted. Thompson, I got nothing to say bad about Steve Thompson, but I know I'll beat him up.
Okay.
Who did I forget?
That's it. We're good.
Darren Till. He's the worst. This guy. You know why I was following him, Eric? I was following him because I don't like other people with undefeated records.
Yeah.
I got an undefeated record. I've been undefeated for 9 years. Darren Till stinks. I'll beat him up so easy. And, you know, he wants to talk like he's tough on tour. Hey, Darren, if you're really tough, call the UFC. Tell them you want me in London. I'll come to London. I'm not scared. I'll beat you up in front of all your home fans. Tell them, bring Funky to London to come beat you up.
Okay, so now let's talk about Donald Trump here for a second. How did this come about?
This came about from promises made, promises kept. Ario, we talked about this in Chicago. We sat down on the couch and I talked about what I was going to do after I won the belt. Did I not tell you that?
Yeah, you did. You did.
Everything I've been telling you since the beginning has come true, Ario. Remember when I said champagne and title fights on U.S. soil? Yeah. I'm going to destroy Damian Maia in that dump. I'm going to destroy RDA with my cardio pace in Chicago. I'm going to bring the belt to Donald J. Trump, the leader of the free world, the greatest living man in the world. Come on. Everything I say, Ario, comes true.
Okay, so what was it like when you met him?
It was the best day of my life. I can't lie. I mean, we're sitting in the lobby and there's like senators like Lindsey Graham who's going in there to negotiate these big tax bills and immigration laws and all this stuff. And here I am getting ready to walk into the Oval Office and hang out with the leader of the free world. And not only that, you know, he hung out with us for a good solid 30 minutes and just joked and made laughs. You know, he's actually really bigger, a lot bigger in person than you would think. And he like towered over me. I was a little bit nervous. I thought he was going to get me or something. He put the collar tie on me for a little bit. And I was like, damn, wow. Mr. President, you're strong.
Yeah, we actually have the photos right here. Everyone's looking at them. He's sitting down. You have this massive smile on your face. You're wearing the hat. What a scene it was. Did he know who you were?
Yeah, he knew who I was. He kept calling me champ. You know, he talked about how he likes wrestling. He grew up wrestling, so he can admire my amateur wrestling background. And he also likes pro wrestling. You know, he was talking about his hair versus hair match with Vince McMahon at WrestleMania. And we were just joking and laughing. He's a regular guy, man. He's a stand-up guy. He's a comedian. He's an average guy, man. Everybody depicts him to be something else, but he's actually a really nice guy.
Did he say anything to the effect of, look, his relationship with athletes isn't the best, and I'll ask you about that in a second, but did he say anything to the effect of that he appreciates the fact that you wear a hat? I mean, not a lot of people do that you go out and support him. Did he thank you for that?
Yeah, I mean, he was thankful that, you know, I'm using my platform to raise him up, raise awareness to his campaign and making America great again. You know, not like these other liberal Hollywood athletes that, you know, are trying to bring him down. You know, it's a joke.
Is that his signature on your hat?
That is his signature on my hat. how cool is that?
That is cool. Now, did you invite him to your next fight?
I didn't invite him to my next fight, and hopefully he'll be there. Just depends on, you know, what he's got going on. Hopefully we don't have to go to war with, like, North Korea or something, or something crazy happens in the meantime.
Now, who's in the room when you're meeting him?
Who's what?
Who's in the room when you're meeting him? Who's with you?
No one's with me.
It's just you two? No one else? No Dana White?
Oh, in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
No, it was me and Dan Lambert and Matt Hughes and Dana White. And then we went in there. Lindsey Graham was just walking out. And then there was a couple Secret Service guys and four-star general and Mr. President.
Kind of wild that there you are giving him the belt, photo op. And on a week where he's battling LeBron James, where, you know, the Eagles and the Warriors say, what kind of reaction are you getting to this? Because not a lot of athletes are campaigning to go meet the president these days.
Yeah, it's a mixed reaction. You know, you got one side and you got the other side. But, you know, I love my country. I'm proud to be American. I'm proud to be a world champion. And I think this is how you really should celebrate being a world champion. Bring in your belt to the White House. To state that you're proud to be American, because I wouldn't have my opportunity to do what I feel and everything that I do without America, my freedoms and my opportunity.
Is there any part of you while you're standing there, like, do you have this out-of-body experience saying, I can't believe I'm actually in the White House right now, meeting the president with a belt and all? I mean, this is kind of like, who could have predicted this a year ago?
It's everything I was predicted and I knew I was going to happen. It's my destiny. I told you about this a long time ago. That's why, you know, when my haters want to come out and say stupid things, it's just like, I just laugh at them. You know, I can't help but laugh. That's why I have no feelings, because people say things and they live with their lies. I say truth and I live out my truth. So, you know, it's everything I always have ever dreamed of, and I'm proud to be American.
Well, I could see it now. Golden Boy presents Fitty versus Rampage. The war to settle the score. You come out. You be bouncing in the club, all for the da 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 da. Just to squeeze.
Don't.
What?
Don't do that.
You know what I mean? Just to turn the tables on him.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't ever try to rap or pretend to rap ever again, Eric. Don't.
Go Rampage. It's your birthday.
No.
We gonna party like it's.
No. Sorry. No. If I was there, I'd slap you.
Oh, what a scene that would be. That, I feel like that's actually in the works here.
Yeah. You keep bringing up Shell beating me again and see what happens. Don't ever say that shit in person. Don't ever do the interview like that in person, because you're going to need bodyguards keeping off you.
I thought
you was my boy, and then, you know what I'm saying? That's why I want to come on your show, because you doing stuff with mother that's fighting me. And what's up with that?
Oh, my bad.
That's bias, and that's rude.
You know what? I've taken your criticism to heart, but on this show, he's not a part of it. It's just me. And if I'm being honest between you and I, if I had to pick, I mean, you're my guy. We've been through a lot together. So just, I hope he's not listening to this, but you're my guy. You know what I mean? I would never betray you.
I don't believe you.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't believe you. I heard you and Tell, like, y'all like stepbrothers right now. That's right. Y'all like the new stepbrothers. Y'all like best friends. Y'all got bump edge and all that shit.
You and me, we have a lot more in common than Chill. I mean, the Jews and the African Americans, we're like brothers. You know what I'm saying?
I know that. See, that's what I'm saying. I know that. You know what I'm saying? That's why I get you. You know what I'm saying? But then you kind of hurt my feelings. Just saying.
Okay.
Put that out there.
All right. Well,
the Jews and the blacks, we got to stick together.
We're like this. I don't know. You can't see me, but we're like this. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So I'm very happy for you. I'm happy you came back on the show. I was starting to think it was personal. You were sort of avoiding me and Tiki and all this stuff.
Yeah, I was.
You were? Okay. So it was personal.
You got your son on your show. Why I want to do a show with somebody just beat me?
No, he's not on the show. This is my show. This is Ariel Helwani's MMA show. It is the premier show in this sport. It has nothing to do with him. How old were you when your dad passed away?
I think I was 23.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you ever think what he would say about all this?
He'd have loved it. He'd have absolutely loved it. Yeah. I think about it all the time. But one of those things.
What do you think he would get more of a kick out of, like you doing the TV stuff or you being the competitor?
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? I option three. I thought you were going to say antagonist or something along those lines, because he would have soaked that. He would have soaked that up.
He would have loved it?
Oh, he'd have loved it. We used to watch WWF back when it was WWF as a kid. We only cheered for the bad guys.
Really?
We never cheered for the good guys. No, we always wanted Ric Flair to figure four Hulk Hogan. Yeah, we're the only ones in the crowd.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we always cheer for the guys with the black hat. So I think he would have had some real fun with it.
Do you think you do this out of tribute to him?
Definitely.
Really?
Yeah.
So you think if he was around, he would be pushing you to do it more?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, do you mean the antagonist?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. You know, see, my dad was real interesting about that. He would secretly love it. He'd probably tell his buddies. I don't know if he'd ever mention it to me. But, you know, he used to bring me down to this boxing gym when I was just a teenager. And they had a bar right next door. So before you know it, now his buddies are coming down to boxing practice. And now they're all over at the bar before they come over, and they're, you know, wanting to hand out 50s to anyone that'll spar with me and things like that. I didn't know how to box. It's like, Dad, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, oh, God damn it, you'll be just fine in there. And if you're not, then, well, yeah, he used to do stuff like that all the time. He had ample amounts of faith in me, but many times his idea of how good I was not as good as he thought I was.
Interesting.
Yeah, at many different things. And he'd always confused. No matter how many times I would get my ass kicked, it would surprise him every time.
So do you feel like he would be like your mom in a sense that he would be correcting you after your fights? You didn't do this right, you didn't do that right, even though you won, even though you were dominant.
I don't know that he'd say that much to me, but he would pull Clayton aside.
Interesting.
Yeah. I can't talk. I do what Clayton says. I don't talk to Clayton about what I think. My dad probably would.
Okay.
Let's go get a beer. Okay. Coach, let's go get a beer. You know, he'd probably share his.
Yeah. Did he ever – so did you have any pro fights
while he was around?
I had a few. He was very, very sick. Very sick. And he drove 4 hours to watch me fight in Washington State. And it was a very good fight by my standards back then. It won it with kickboxing, punching and kicking. And the fight guy finally ducked out and went outside the ropes, and the ref waved it off. But it was all stand-up, which was just a skill set that I didn't really use a whole lot of. And that was a big thrill, but that was the last time he saw me.
Really? Okay. Who'd you fight? Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. Justin Haas. I was trying to think of it as we were doing this conversation. A guy named Justin Haas.
Okay, and he passed away from cancer, right?
Yeah.
Wow. And it's amazing what you've accomplished. So 23, you're now?
41.
41, wow. Mm-hmm. That was a long time ago.
Seemed like yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah. You still think about what he would say about all this.
Oh, yeah. You always think about that. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it never goes away.
And do you feel – so when I asked you, I just asked you like what –
I mean, that's the bad part of having a good dad. Like when you ask me that, it's actually very hard for me. You know, part I'm staying strong here. But that's the plight of having a good dad. I had a good dad.
Yeah.
So
– great dad.
You miss him. Yeah, I miss him.
Your dad also has one of the greatest names of all time. Walter.
Oh, yeah.
That's my son's name.
Oh, okay.
It's a great name. I love that name. One of the all-time great names. And he was in the news earlier this year.
He's more famous than I am.
Yes. He's on CNN. He's in the local news. The crazy thing about these stories, they don't even mention you. They don't mention that you're like the it was like at your, like victory party. You're in the back with the belt, but he's that famous that you're kind of like.
I love it though. It's totally fine. I think it's so awesome.
For those that don't know, tell us the story. So Walter and his buddy. Uncle Robbie. Mm-hmm. Tell us the story.
So basically, my dad, he never knew his biological father growing up. He just knew that he was a wartime worker that came through the islands, and my grandma had him. And so anyway, his whole life, he's been on a search for him. And recently, with like Ancestry.com, 23andMe, all those websites, we were able to get him DNA tests just to see what would happen. So for his birthday, we got him the DNA tests, and a few months later, he gets this really high match that says, like, oh, you share half of your DNA with this person. We think it might be a half-brother. And when he clicks on the profile and sees the contact information, like the email, he's like, oh, my goodness, I think this might be Uncle Robbie, which is one of his best friends growing up. They grew up together at Punahou, played football together, and they were actually classmates because my dad repeated a grade, Uncle Robbie skipped a grade. So they, even though they're siblings, like they were classmates. And so, and it was so funny too, because prior to us finding out all of this, I met up with them in Vegas. I was actually doing something for Bellator in Vegas, and I walked up to Uncle Robbie thinking he was my dad. Oh. And he turned around, I'm just like, oh. I'm so sorry. Like, so they
kind of look
totally
alike.
Yeah. And we would always tell them, like, guys, you know, it looks like you could be brothers or something. Turns out they are. My grandma had a secret baby back during the war, and it was my Uncle Robbie. She gave him up for adoption and everything. So on top of that, we were also able to find my dad's actual biological father.
Oh.
And turns out he has like four other brothers on that side. They all came to my fight at Pechanga.
Oh.
And so it's just been awesome. Like every question my dad ever had, we were able to find out for him. And now him and Robbie, you know, attached at the hip.
That's
enjoying,
amazing.
Enjoying the retired life together.
And so did he meet his biological parents? Are they still alive?
No, they're not. Yeah, my dad's like 74 or something. Okay. He's pretty old.
Okay, so you never actually got to meet them?
No, but he was able to meet all his new brothers, and it was a really cool family reunion at my fight.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
And were they, it's probably hard because they're not alive, but was he able to find out why his mom gave up Robbie for adoption?
Yeah, it was it's kind of a crazy story. They got to make a movie about it.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Basically, she had five boys, and the three middle ones were the ones that she gave up.
Whoa.
Yeah, but it was just crazy times during the war, you know? And something like her husband was in prison. I don't know. It's all these like crazy dark family secrets. Damn. But yeah, so we were able to unravel the mystery and everything, but we totally understand my grandma's decisions with all of this just because it was just nuts back then.
Was anyone with your dad when he found out?
I believe my sister was.
I can't imagine his reaction.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to find a brother that you have not met or haven't, you know, had any interactions with for 50 years. It's your actual, like, best bud?
Yeah.
He ends up being your brother?
Yeah.
That's insane.
So I'm sure you saw, if you watched the videos and everything of the reveal, it was super emotional.
Yeah.
Everyone's crying and, but yeah, it was perfect. Everyone's like, oh, they took away, they stole your thunder from your belt party. I'm like, no, I don't care at all. This is so much better than I could have imagined.
Incredible. And it was right before Christmas, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't script a better story than this.
Yeah.
Can I share pain? That's something Please. That nobody knows. So
okay.
I finished the fight with Lyoto, and next day with my mom to buy her medicine. And then I'm there. And then I see a guy with no teeth, and then I go, and I was leaving. My mom's in the car. The guy come to me and say, Victor, can I talk to you for a second? I say, sure. I said, I know who killed your sister. I was in jail with him. I just left jail now. Imagine the next day, Sunday, I'm going to the airport. My mom's taking me to there. My mom's in the car. I'm outside. And then for a second, I said, that's not the guy that you think it was. I know who he was. And he started walking away. And that, back then, I was feeling, and he started walking and walking. I said, Victor, I know him. I know him. And then he started living in, and then I had a chance. What I do now? So life is hard, man. Life is hard. And then I was here 2 days ago. They sent me a picture of a girl that they thought I was her, and wasn't her, but I think they found her. So missing people, it's something that I always want to help people that struggle. And I mean, what's the biggest struggle of society? It's when you lose your loving ones. That's sure. I think that's the biggest struggle.
Yeah.
But even bigger is when you have to bury your own son. Mm. I think that's not human. Am I right? That's not human. A father can, if I had the chance, I would stop that. You cannot bury your kids. But worse than that is when the father and the mother don't know where their kids is.
Right.
So that's a burying every day. So I experienced, I think, the highest pain. So I remember my mom came to me and said, son, you don't know what's losing your sister. And that thing struck my heart. And because I was watching my mom die, and I'm still watching them go away. So I said, my God, I don't know that. And then the next day I say, Mom, I want to talk to you. You don't know what is having a missing sister and see your mom die when you're alive. And then she realized that my pain is not bigger than your pain. So I don't know what people go through struggle, but sharing is the only way to improve society. And sharing means include your personal life. I'm a public figure. So if I use my pain as a way to increase somebody, as a medicine, and if you share your pain with me, you bring me medicine. So we live in a world that everything is so business, make money, do be successful, go over, you know, doesn't care. That when we see that this is still real, we still have real athletes, real fighters, real businessmen, real agency, because it's hard to see authenticity and sincerity in people. And I don't mind sharing. You know, sharing my defeats, sharing my glory.
Yeah.
That's what we do. Like you said, I love when people see you chanting. I love when I can connect to a fan in the street or whatever, when I can share to a post or whatever. So that's a real letter that I write for her every year, and I'm going to continue to do that. And like I said, I believe one day we're going to have all the answers for us, but now the world is not right and we don't see right. So
do you think you know who did it?
It's hard. It's hard to, like, I kind of know, but like I said, we don't have a conclusion. And right. Like I said, things can change. You never know what's happened. I say, if I don't have a conclusion, if you don't see the body, if you don't see the proof, until you see it, you don't have a crime, right?
Sure.
So it's hard, but we know how it was, and so kind of we know a line of how the crime was. It's sad to see people, they don't care. So another thing people don't understand, do you know the third most lucrative thing in the world?
I feel like you're going to say like trade, human.
Sex traffic.
Yeah,
sex traffic.
Yeah, horrible.
And why sex traffic is so lucrative is because they don't understand the crimes that go behind that. And you know Gisele Bündchen?
Yeah, yeah.
Her city is where women get taken so much. So it's sad to see that behind the missing kids or whatever has so much crime involved, traffic organs, and you name it. And it's sad to see the world the way it is. But I think we are here to make a difference, and I think you are, and I am, and so many people, and your show. So we're going to share our stories, our glories, and our defeats.
But now that your kids are older and they know, like they go through the training camp with you and they see the whole build up to a fight, and then when you explain to them the next day what happened, does that make it almost worse in a sense? Like when you don't have kids, you just kind of deal with the loss, you move on. But now you have to actually explain it to your kids. Is that the worst?
Oh, that's terrible. It's terrible. You talking about now, listen, I have no regrets with this fight. I really don't. I feel good about it. I get it. But telling my kids is something like right now, even thinking about it, it makes me emotional. It's crazy. This one was, they're always tough, especially when you lose. My first was the worst, and then this one was pretty bad only because now my kids are getting even older.
Right.
And so they're getting it more.
Right.
They're more involved. They know who I'm fighting. They know, you know, what they're good at and what, you know, I'm good at. And they've known what I've gone through and like what I've accomplished and then losing and then now coming back, almost fighting for a title. Like they understand the whole logistics of it all. This past one, my daughter, it was tough. I came in the room right after the fight. I went back to the hotel room, and all my kids were sleeping. But I guess someone had gone into the hotel room where my kids were, and my daughter overheard them talking about my fight and that I lost, and she overheard them.
Oh, no.
So then she woke up, and she was asking if she wanted to see me. Damn it, Ariel. Have I cried on your show before? This is terrible. Man. I love my kids. I love my daughter. But basically, she was praying. She was blaming herself because she fell asleep as she was saying the prayer for me.
Oh, man.
She was saying a prayer for me to win, and then she woke up, and she overheard them saying that I lost, and she kept praying. She thought it was like a dream, a bad dream, and she was just kept praying until I was there, and I had to tell her. Stop. Damn it, Weidman. She had to tell her, no, it really did happen. It's not your fault, and it's all good. It's part of God's plan. It's all good.
Oh, man.
Damn it, you made me cry.
I'm sorry, you're making me cry.
Can you put the camera just on him? This is embarrassing.
You're making me cry. Wow. That's a horrible story.
It's terrible. I tried to slow it up so I wouldn't cry, and I still cried.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to ask you that.
You're not sorry. No, this is what you live for.
It breaks my heart. It breaks my heart.
I'm not even that. I'm not that heartless. I could actually start asking you about your kids right now, but I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Oh, what is Eric bringing in the tissue boxes? Jeez, Louise. But CJ is like the bigger fan.
Yeah. CJ was crying. CJ was crying. But the
just
thing
let
is,
it all out
I'll
at
be
this point. Let's just
CJ. But I'll be honest, CJ. I missed that. He woke up in the morning and I wasn't actually there, and so he was. He was hysterical, but I wasn't there.
Okay.
And then when he seen me, he was a little bit stronger, and I was able to like explain it to him. But when I wasn't there, my wife had to endure that.
Oh,
and
man.
I heard that wasn't easy.
What a saint she is, having to deal
with
that.
My wife is an amazing woman.
Any other plans while you're in New York?
My cousin better take me to see the Statue of Liberty, and she like better take me around because she has not done that yet.
Oh.
And we haven't done much. I've cooked dinner for her a couple nights.
Okay.
And then I went to New Jersey, and I did get to experience your train station.
Yes.
I went from New Jersey to New York.
Newark to Penn Station probably.
Well, I started at Penn Station, and then I accidentally got on the wrong train, and then I went to Newark, and I had to stay there for an hour and a half and wait for another train, and then I had to like figure it out because my phones died.
Okay,
both of my phones.
Gosh.
So it was pretty. It was.
Why do you have two phones?
One for the plug and one for the low.
What does that mean?
It's a song.
What?
It's a song.
Oh, okay.
I got two. Phones, one for the plug and one for the low. No?
No.
Okay, it's a rap
Who
song.
Sings it?
I'm
usually up to up on my rap game, but not not that one.
I don't know. I don't know.
Now, the low is like that's on the DL.
Yeah.
And what's the plug?
It could be the job.
Oh.
The
I
job.
Feel like you're not telling me the truth. So do you really have two phones?
I do have two phones.
Why?
I have one phone no, actually, it works out really well.
Okay.
So one of my phones.
Except for when they both die.
Yes, except for when they both die. It's That's bad. But one phone, it has all my social media on it. It's kind of like the phone number that I'll kind of give to whoever. It's okay. More of a public phone. And then I have my other phone that is more like family and personal. So if they don't get a hold of me on my main phone, they can contact me on that phone. But that phone also has all my music on it. And I don't have any social media on that phone so that when it's time to like train or do something, my music and everything's on the one phone. If I need to use it, if someone needs to get a hold of me, they can. But I don't allow for my social media or any distractions.
Oh, okay. I like that. You're running. You don't want people to bother you and things like that. Now, the number I texted you on, is that on the first phone or the second phone?
That's on the second phone. That's on the personal one.
Whoa. Look at me.
Yeah, I like
I
that.
I made it.
Yeah.
So I'm the plug.
You're the
or
plug.
Or am I the low?
No, you're the plug.
All right. Okay. Well done on my part. That's awesome. A one-of-a-kind character, the father of the notorious Conor McGregor. Of course, he's probably very excited for October 6th. But a few weeks back, he made headlines. He went viral when he posted this clip on social media about the DART system over in Ireland. Let's play the clip and say hello
to Tom. Everybody. Good evening. I just let you know about my travel experience on the DART this afternoon. That's the rail system that Dublin City operate. It's called the Dublin Area Rapid Transport, something like that, DART, that's what it stands for. Anyway, I was none too plussed with my experience on the DART. When I got to Lansdowne Road station, I tendered a brand new crisp €20 note into the automatic machine looking for a single ticket to Dunleary. They had the bloody cheek to give me back, and I'm going to show you this coinage, €20, 17.30, and a miserable little one-way ticket. They gave me all that coinage. I have no room to put those coins anywhere. I wear a slim fit, hand fitted Hugo Boss suit.
And in vintage McGregor fashion, he turned that clip into a sponsorship deal. The one and only Tony McGregor joins us right now. Mr. McGregor, how are you?
Good evening, Mr. Halwani. Yes, I'm very well. Thanks very much. I had good fun with that, Ariel, to be honest with you. I had a good fun day, and it just, you know, it was a bit of humour. And on the back of that, I was appointed a brand ambassador for a soft mineral drink, Loop Say Zero. So, really and truly, it just, I'm just having great fun with it, you know. And Mr. Ambassador now, by the way.
Mr. Ambassador Tony McGregor, so you were handing out free rides on the DART system on Friday in association with Lucozade Zero. You're their ambassador for the day. Does that blow your mind that your little video over there captivated so many people that it led to that?
Yeah, no, I had good fun. I mean, the whole thing was orchestrated very well. You know, the whole campaign was fabulous. I had an input into the campaign as well. I mean, the red suit was my idea, so the LucasAid people were just blown away by them, and I brought an energy and happiness on the day. And, you know, to weary commuters, it was a cold, wet day, you know, so we were there cheering them up with free travel cards and free cans of the LucasAid Zero drink. So, you know, we had good fun on the day.
And have you heard
happiness on a dreary Friday morning for the commuters of Dublin?
Oh, yes, it's wonderful. What a brilliant idea on their part. Have you heard from the DART about trying to fix this issue?
I met some of the bigwigs of DART and the Irish Rail system. They're very nice people. I had good fun with them as well. And, you know, they're all there doing the job as well. So, you know, I had good fun on the day.
Things were good between all of us, you know, between Conor, myself, and Khabib, you know. We saw Khabib often at, you know, shows or, you know, different Reebok launches or whatnot. You know, we were always very respectful to each other. You know, I always made sure to come up, you know, shake his hand, say hello, ask how he is. And, you know, we both done the same. It was all good. Until that all changed when, for some reason, and I don't know why, but Khabib started calling Conor a chicken. I'm not sure why he wanted to do that or why he started to do that, because everything was just fine before that, and Conor had never said anything bad towards Khabib. And for some reason, Khabib decided, you know, to start calling him chicken. And now it might not sound very serious to you guys, but just so you know, chicken is one of the most severe insults you can give a man in Russia. In fact, you call someone a chicken in Russia, that is a person that, you know, gets... raped in prison, you know, in male prison. That's what a chicken is in Russia. And Khabib knows that, and everybody knows that. So it is a very, very, very severe insult. So I'm hearing all this, and I see this, and Khabib keeps going on with this chicken here, chicken there. At every interview, he's calling Conor chicken, chicken this, chicken that. And again, Conor is still respectful, not saying anything. We don't really know where this is all coming from. Khabib was very respectful beforehand. And now I guess the more, you know, he says chicken, he sees all the media, you know, picking it up. He sees all the attention. And I guess he enjoys that. He wants the PR, and he keeps going with it. Now, this goes on for about a year. And then in an interview, I get asked about this. A Russian journalist asked me, what can you say about Khabib calling Conor chicken? Now, of course, you know, me knowing the severity of this insult, I had to respond, you know, in a hard way. And I think anybody would have done the same. If I didn't do that, then what kind of friend am I? Do you know what I mean? So, of course, you know, my response was very harsh, but I spoke facts. You know, I talked about Khabib himself pulling out from all the fights all the time, and the fact that Conor has never pulled out, and I was like, how can he call him a chicken when he's the one pulling out all the time, but Conor, you know, never pulled out. Look, it was a harsh response, but, you know, given the situation, I thought it was an appropriate response, and I didn't see how I could not respond in that way. And to be honest, if I was asked 100 times with the same interview, the same question, my response would have been the same, even though knowing what has happened since then. Now, after that, this interview that happened, that was about 2 years ago. Mm. Since that interview, I had seen Khabib many times in Russia, in Moscow. You know, we were at the same events with fight nights. You know, I've seen him. You know, he's never said anything to me, never came up to me, never done anything until this time in New York. I had my fight, and I saw him in the corridor, and I was doing an interview with one of the UFC staff. He was standing beside me, and I had the UFC phone in my hand, and I was supposed to do, and I was doing an interview on the phone. Khabib saw me. He was alone first. He approached me alone first, and we had, you know, a very harsh exchange of words, but there was no contact at all between us. He was alone, and I was alone. And then he walked away from me, and literally minutes later, not minutes, I mean, like moments later, he ran up to me with all this big gang of guys, and suddenly he got brave, and he started to get physical and all this. Now, I was a little bit kind of taken back and a little bit shook. I'm not going to lie. You know, a million things were going through my head. You know, he was the main event at the time. We're at a UFC office. We're not, you know, in the hotel. We're not, like, on the street or anything like that. So I'm kind of, you know, taken back by all this. And he, throughout this whole thing, even when he first approached me alone, and again when he approached me with the guys, he kept asking me the same thing. Why did you say that? And I kept repeating the same thing. I said, look, you've called my brother a chicken. How could I not respond to you? If somebody called your brother a chicken, you probably would have responded the same way. And he just kept saying, none of your business. That's none of you. Why did you call me that? Why did you say that? Why? Over and over and over again. And I said to him, I said, look, I didn't say that to you directly. I said that in response to you calling him a chicken. And that was it. So that's how that all happened.
When he approached you, and we're seeing some of that video right now in the hotel in Brooklyn, how physical did it get?
No, I mean, it wasn't like crazy physical or anything, but, you know, it was obviously insulting. You know, he grabbed the back of my head, you know, and you know, she was, like I said, he kept asking me the same thing, and I kept telling him the same thing over and over, the same. I answered it to you because you called Conor a chicken, and I had to respond to you, and that was it.
And for those of us that obviously don't speak Russian and didn't see the interview, could you tell us exactly what you said that bothered him so much? Like, do you know, was it a word or two that you said about him in that interview in response that really got under his skin?
Yeah, it was the whole thing. I just kept saying, look, he's the one pulling out the whole time. He's, you know, he's pulled out whatever 5 or 6 times, you know, and Conor's never pulled out. How can he call somebody chicken? You know, Conor has fought with all kinds of injuries. We all know that he fought with no ACL, and Khabib pulled out with lesser injuries. You know, he pulled out with, I believe, a meniscus tear. You know, like, look, it was a harsh response. I'm not taking that back at all. But given the severity of the insult that he was given, like, I will repeat again what chicken means. You know, I told you already, yeah, about the people getting it. That's when somebody's in male prison that gets raped, you know, they call them chicken. That's or rooster, whatever, you know, that's what they call them. So it was a very, very severe insult. It's one of the most severe insults you can give a man in Russia, probably. So, you know, of course, my response was very harsh as well. But once again, I'll repeat, he said he did absolutely nothing about that for that interview was 2 years ago, and we had seen each other many times one-on-one in Moscow at Fight Night's events or whatnot. He never came up to me, never said anything, never done anything. And again, in New York, he first approached me alone, and he didn't touch me. Yes, we had, you know, harsh exchange of words, but there was no physicality. Then he walks away, and moments later, he runs up with 15 guys, and now suddenly he's brave.
To the best of your knowledge, it was around 15 guys. How many people were you with?
It was just me, and then I had a friend with me who was from Chechnya, Islam. He was also there. You know, he, when they first kind of run up, he was there, but then he ran towards me straight away, and he was there as well, just trying to calm them down and kind of, you know, prevent the situation. Just, look, guys, we're all fighting, you know, we'll have fights. We have fight, they have fight. Let's just, you know, calm down and just, you know, everybody relax, and we can sort it afterwards if needs be. You know, that sort of thing.
You know, many people, right, are Arios, they come around me and they can't last around me and around this lifestyle, around this fight, around the true fight game and true fight preparation. If it wasn't for Artem giving me all of himself, I wouldn't be where I'm at. He was the one that was able to step inside that octagon with me and help me prepare for bouts. Even backstage, he was able to help me prepare for bouts. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have been able to reach the level that I needed to reach to get to this level that I'm at now. So Artem has done a lot for me over the years, and that's it. That was certainly a big turning point. And the fact is, they're from the same place, and the fact that they're both there for fight week, and I had helped Artem for that current fight where he was supposed to fight Bruce Leroy, and he put in a lot for that camp. He was in phenomenal condition, and then when it all happened, and I knew what was going down in his hometown in Russia, you know, it was a low move. And then the fact that the other guy, the Chechen guy that was there, you know, it was just low, I felt. So that was it. But there's many other things. And, you know, yourself, we'll just move on.
Fair enough.
There's been a lot. Well, actually, you're telling me to move on. I'm all right where I'm at, please. Artie's telling me move on. You're right, because I do have a lot of stuff pending. But I also have a fight pending, and that's what I'm looking forward to most. But the man's a fake rat, Ariel. Simple as. You know yourself. You know the sus. You know who he's managed by. You know the way they are. You know what type of people they are. Every single one of them. Every single one of them can get it. And this is never going to be over. This fight, it's not over on this fight. Trust me on that. Every one of them need to watch where they step. Watch what they say. Watch what they do. Watch where they sleep at night. And that's the truth of it. So that's my thoughts on the whole thing. And now we'll move on.
Okay. Does this fight feel different for you, though, Khabib? 26 fights, you fought on some big stages, but can you acknowledge that this one is a little different, that it's actually personal?
Yeah, I agree. This is a little bit more than defend my title, more than fight for the title. You know, this is more than, like, fight in many, even biggest show. This is a little bit personal for me, of course. And, you know, I want to make this guy pay, you know. This guy going to pay about everything, what he say, what he did. And, you know, it's like 5 days, I'm very happy. We're here now, and we're very close. And, you know, and I'm not underestimating this guy. I know this guy has good timing, good boxing. And, you know, it's like if you watch about his conditioning, about his wrestling, about his grappling, about his heart, heart is very important, because when all the time when someone close with him, he tap all the time. Like, you know, like when you go inside the MMA machine, they give you something. They give you something like you feel, if you feel something like panic or something, you have to put, you know, it's like you can touch. This is like this. When you're on top of him and when he tired, he all the time tap, you know. And he tapped 4 times already on his 30 years, and for number 5, he can tap easily, you know. And he have good whiskey, like he say. He have good money, like he say. And he think this is legacy. He think, you know, it's like when cage close, I'm going to be very close all the time and make this guy tap. First of all, make him tired, and after make him tap. This is my claim.
All these guys is fake ass. Like this guy, he said, oh, can you bring out somebody for you? You nothing.
Who?
This guy, the guy was 13-4 record. He said, Khabib Gawan got the crew and come get with me.
Oh, Artem.
Like, bro, you got slapped. You got slapped. You didn't even say nothing. You don't do nothing. You understand?
And it's all good, man.
Why do we want to keep this going?
It's not keep it going, but the whole thing is, I'm going to defend my turf. These guys, my brothers.
You are part of this story. Connor called you a terrorist.
Brother, listen,
let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Why don't you defend yourself?
Brother, you know why I need to defend myself?
Yeah.
Because I guarantee you, this man will not say this in front of my eyes.
I mean, he said it right in front of you in the press conference.
With 100 security with cameras. Well. You understand? With cameras. Brother, listen to me. I'm going to tell you something. This guy talked, these oldest guys, they say it's not over. This. Yeah. These guys, they're not about this life.
What is this life?
They're not about this gangster talk life. When you go to an arena.
Are you?
Huh?
Are you?
Bro, I'm a father. But right. I'm down for my friend. I'm down for my family. If I see you on the street, some going down, guarantee you I'll be there for you. This is who I am. This is who I grew up. But guarantee you, all this talk they did, they didn't back it up inside the cage. They didn't back it out inside the cage. You know what I'm saying? You got people calling somebody a Muslim rat, and they denied it. Of course they denied it. But guess what? He was saying it on Instagram and Twitter throughout the week. You understand?
Dylan.
Brother, I don't even... He's one mother... I see him. I promise you, I'm going to smack him.
Why?
But brother, this guy... Listen, Conor McGregor is the world champion.
Yeah.
You understand? He's the double champ.
Yeah.
You understand? You want an old bum. Never won a black belt jiu-jitsu tournament as a world champion. You understand? You living of this man's legacy. You know, and this is Conor's problem. He's an idiot. You know, everybody's sucking his blood, but it's on him.
He shit on me a little bit in the lead up to the Khabib fight.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, you just beat a real estate agent. And that was like, dude, shut the f*** up. He's like gotten gifted a lot of like this would be really like the guy that he's had, you know, he has done what he's supposed to be doing when he's getting, but he's been giving the best opponents his entire UFC career. He's been given the most money. He's been given everything. He got knee surgery. They freaking flew him out to LA. They put him in a hotel. He had GSP come visit him. He had every advantage to do everything. He's got all the money in the world. Me, on the other hand, I freaking fought and scrapped for everything. He got on the mic. He goes, Dana, bonus, 60 Gs, baby. And, oh, yeah, here you go, Conor. Me, I had to freaking curse out the boss. I freaking cursed out the boss of the UFC, and I still got a bonus. How about that? Ask for a knee surgery. They say no. They told me I couldn't get the knee surgery I wanted. I did all the research. I did everything. They told me the hospital I wanted to go was too expensive. Now that hospital is partners with the UFC. Now it was like, I couldn't believe, you know. So I'm the guy that's fought the UFC and still made it. Conor McGregor was freaking like kissing. He was like buddy-buddy all the way up. It was like freaking, you know, oh, yeah, give me this opponent. This is the, you know, who did he fight? The top 10 in the lightweight division is f***ing stacked, and he went right to the top and fought a guy that was probably his best stylistic matchup. You know, you see what happens when he goes there against Khabib. Khabib made him look like an infant, you know. He fought tough, he did, but... He could practice his wrestling all day long. He could spend all his money and bring out the best wrestlers in the world. But I spent freaking two summers when I was in high school at Jay Robinson 28-day intensive camp in Minnesota. I'm sure when Conor McGregor was that age, he was freaking – he was probably on his summers hanging out with his friend. Who knows what he was doing. But he was not in freaking – the trenches with the guys that wanted to become the best in freaking Minnesota. I live on Long Island in freaking the summer in July. I'm going to Minnesota to wrestle. Are you kidding me? There's no way that this guy has it. Kevin Lee didn't have it, and this guy doesn't have it. When it gets tough, they just mentally, it's not, they check out. They check out. And I'm not, it's the same thing. It's the pomp and circumstance, freaking outfits, all that. Oh, good for you. It's not going to, it doesn't make one difference. I'm a different breed in there. They know they're going to have to kill me. And when you get in there, they feel different. Masvidal felt it. Everyone's like, oh, Masvidal didn't look the best. He didn't look the best against Al. Khabib was exposed against Al. You know, his boxing's not that good. He's amateurish in his defense. And then he goes down, knocks Conor McGregor down. And then same thing with Kevin Lee. Kevin Lee makes, he looks like an animal. You know what I mean? He is an animal. He's destroyed, but he felt something different in there. I was his daddy for 25 minutes. He knew that there was no way he was winning that fight. The second that fight started, he changed, totally changed.
God bless you, Al.
Let's go, Al. Come on.
What more can you say? Ally Quinta, everyone. What a win. And where can I sign up for the Conor fight? I mean, did you see the way he laid that out? Where can I sign up for it? That was incredible.
You know, I always says that the thing that excites me the most, it's when I could be the first to do something. You know, when something cannot be done, people doubt me. They're like, oh, it's impossible to do. You would never do that. And then he's a great champion in terms of legacy. I can't think of a better man and a fighter right now who has a better legacy than Khabib in terms of popularity, also legacy, and if you look at the real fighter, not only as who sells the most, but in terms of who's the real top pound for pound fighter. You know, I think he ranked right up there.
Do you think you can make 155?
I think I could. I'm not 100% sure. I think I could. Yes, if I'm, it's like a marathon training. Ariel, people are like, oh, did you try to cut down at 155? I never did, because it's useless. It's like a marathon. When you train a marathon, you don't make a marathon in training. You do a little bit less than a marathon. You run maybe one third of it. That's the maximum you'll do. And it's the same thing. You never cut weight to try to cut weight. It's not an LT thing. It's very bad.
It's obvious that this year is done as far as like the UFC booking fights. What are the chances you fight in 2019?
It's a big chance. I'm not going to lie. When times fly, I feel like I want to fight. I'm very excited to fight. And some other time when I see different things, I feel like I'm shit, man. I look at myself and I say, what do I have to gain? And then is it worth it? It's always going to be another one and another one. And of course, the competitor inside of me always wanted to fight, you know. And I know I'm capable. It's not that I can't. I'm capable of fighting. I think I'm in my prime right now. But it's just that sometimes I'm like, the motivation, it's not the same that it used to be. I don't have the motivation to go through the lineup again and to fight my way up to another title. I'm done with this. I've done it for so many years, and I, you know what I mean? You reach a point in your career that you want to do things different, and that's why this fight with Bisping was different, because it was a super fight. And for me, that's what I look for. It's more like super fight if I ever fight. I don't want to go back into another mix of... I have like five fight away from a big fight. You know, I wouldn't mind to fight guys that are in terms of novelty fight, like big fights, you know, that have great legacy, but not to go back as a contender and then defend it again and again and again. I'm not going to lie. I'm not motivated for that anymore. I could lie and pretend I am, but I am not.
Do you feel that love? Do you feel a difference now?
I do.
In the way the fans treat you and stuff?
I honestly think, Ariel, that changed in Anaheim when I lost.
Mm.
I truly believe that changed in Anaheim when I lost, because I sat there and I was crying. I wish I would have made it back to the back like the first time.
Yeah,
because I did cry the first time too. But this time I just couldn't make it back to the back. I was so sad. But then after he tested positive, people go, man, this dude was crying a month ago in the octagon, and how dare you not give him a fair shake, right? Like, this is crazy. Like, we applauded you. How could you not give this guy a fair shake? Look at how much it means to him. And for it to be tied in controversy again. It's like, how dare you? And when they said, how dare you, they thought, well, let's take a look at the guy that is putting so much into this that he can't control his emotions when he loses. Mm. Let's look at the guy that's been like this the whole time, right? It's been going up and then steady. Let's take a look at the guy that seems to represent what we think sports should represent. And I think when people did that, it became more okay to cheer for me. And I felt it in Boston and I felt it in July. But you're right. You know, having the second belt, something completely outside of Jones is it's just tremendous. And if I can win these last two heavyweight fights to retire as undefeated UFC heavyweight champion with two defenses, I mean, I talk about being one of the greatest fighters of all time or the greatest fighter of all time. When you say, well, this guy might be one of the best light heavyweights of all time, obviously he lost to Jones twice, so let's put him at number two. But then I become an undefeated heavyweight champion, and then you got to go, well, we might need to start considering this guy one of the greatest heavyweights of all time when you look at his resume. How do you not have me in that conversation? It just doesn't make sense. And anyone that doesn't think that is just stupid.
In your mind, do you have an end point? Do you have an age where you say, like, I don't want to keep going after this?
I feel unsatisfied. You know, like, I feel like I've accomplished so much in the sport. But I feel like some of my troubles have made me just unsatisfied.
Right.
Unfortunately, people don't separate the two very well. So a lot of people do, but some people don't. Some, you know, I've had an extraordinarily beautiful career inside of the octagon, outside of the octagon. It's been very rocky as of late. And, because of the as of late part, I feel like I have more to prove.
Okay.
So I'm going to continue to go in there, until I can get just a few solid, good years out of the way of no controversy and just kicking ass and only that. That's my goal.
So in a way, has this almost extended your career?
It has. It's safe to say it has. Yeah. My originally I was talking about being retired by age 30.
Wow.
And now I'm 31 and I feel like I have a lot to prove still.
Does it ever, like, I don't know if you're the type to sit back and think about the past, but does it bum you out? Like, I could be so, like, that Demetrius Johnson streak, I would have smashed that,
yeah,
right?
It could have been mine.
Yeah.
It could have been mine.
Do you think about those things a lot?
I do, but I try also not to count age that hasn't hatched. You know what I mean? It's like, Dana White says, who knows how many titles John would have had if he hadn't been suspended, you know, right. Or how many more millions he would make. But who knows what else could have happened? Who knows if I would have gotten in a fight that would have seriously hurt me or injured me or lost, or you just never know what would have happened. So I just try not to count eggs that hasn't hatched.
People always talk about the what if. Right, of course. Especially since I came to this company, they love you here at ESPN.
Oh, nice.
Because of the way you fight, because of the style, the way you came into the sport, the youngest champion and everything like that. And I always hear from people, you know what 30 for 30 is, right?
Yeah.
The documentary series.
Yeah.
John Jones.
Do a 30 for 30.
That's going to be a 30 for 30. You can't cool. do it now
yeah.
because your career is still going on. But because of everything that you've been through, are you worried that, as you just said, like some of those things that have happened recently, that's going to be the first thing people talk about? He was so great, but, and maybe if you go through a streak of 10 years with nothing, you can push that to the
right.
the back burner, and it's not at the first sentence.
10 years is a long time. I'm a wild boy, Ariel.
31, you can go to 41 now.
Yeah, no, well, without anything crazy happening, with my crazy self.
you can't guarantee it.
I'd like to, but nothing's guaranteed in
right.
life. What's your question exactly? I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just curious if you're worried that this will be the Something first line. Gonna- of your story.
Right. No, I'm not worried about it. I'm aware that it probably will for a long time.
You're at peace with that.
I'm at peace with that. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, when I signed up to get into the UFC, it was to be able to afford diapers and to make sure my family's good and to make sure that, you know, my branch and my family tree is different than the roots that I'm from. And that's what I've been able to accomplish. And that's what I truly signed up for, man. And then along the way, I started wanting to be this guy for everybody else. And, And I've kind of gotten back to not really worrying about being something for everybody else and focusing on my own salvation, my own health, my own mental and spiritual well-being, and the well-being of my daughters and my fiance. That's what I've learned, that it's truly most important. And so I tend not to really worry about things that are out of my control. Just focus on winning fights, taking care of my management, taking care of my team, the things that I can control. And then all the rest is just, you know, someone's going to love you, someone's going to hate you. You just gotta go with it.
I recall being in Newark the night you beat Shogun. And I recall you holding court at that press conference and telling us about the story earlier in that morning, how you took down the mugger and all that.
Yeah.
And I recall talking to Dana White. They even used the clip in the promo for last year's Cormier fight where he's like, now comes the serious part for John Jones, where all the leeches are going to come and, you know, is he going to make the right decisions? If you could talk to that guy back in March of 2011 about what's to come, about certain decisions not to make, would you like to do so? And if so, what would you say to him?
Yeah, I don't really know if I'd like to talk to that guy. I feel like things that happen in life are all necessary. A lot of things are necessary. Obviously, I've made mistakes, but mistakes teach you what you don't want to be, what you don't want to do, what you don't want to be a part of. You know, I'm really proud of myself. I feel like I've made a lot of good decisions, and I've made a lot of good changes in my life. I don't know what I would say to younger John Jones. Honestly, I have a lot of things that's happened in my life that I regret, but they've shaped me into the guy that I am today, and I'm really proud of the person that I am today, man. My kids really look up to me a lot. They really admire me. I've provided for them. I've been a really great father, and my family's happy, and my actual close friends, like knowing someone's name and knowing people are completely different, you know. Mm. My very close friends, I'm a great friend to them all, and I'm proud. I'm proud of myself.
Could I ask what's your biggest regret?
My biggest regret out of everything,
is there one?
If we were to talk about public things that you know, general public would know about, it was hitting the pregnant woman in that hit and run car accident about 4 years ago now. Even though it was 4 years ago, man, it is something. Everyone has a mother, everyone has a wife or a sister, and that was one of the worst situations I've ever been a part of, man. If you know, I had no clue that was a pregnant woman. Yeah. I had no clue it was a woman. I just knew that I felt like it was a fender bender type of thing. And obviously it wasn't a fender bender, but I wasn't hurt. I felt fine. And I assumed that the person that I hit wasn't hurt as well. And, you know, hairline fracture in the woman's arm, and she was a pregnant woman. It was a terrible, terrible situation. Being a father of daughters and, being a fiance, you know, and being a person who loves his mother dearly, you know, harming a woman is terrible. And that's something that's probably one of the few things that I would totally take back.
It's
if
funny.
I could.
It's interesting that you mentioned that one, because some stuff happened before, but I feel like that was the beginning of a string of things, right? Because
that was kind of my first situation. That
the belt was
just
taken away
bad.
After yeah. and all that. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. You think about that a lot still?
No, I don't think about it at all. Not these days. You know, it was like 4 years ago.
Yeah,
you know, hairline fracture 4 years ago. Girl made almost $1 million off the situation. I'm sure her life's been changed forever. And I'm not making it okay, but I mean, to be real, I mean, the life goes on. The girl's life's gone on. The baby's healthy and happened, man. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people that's even listening right now has done some stupid shit that no one knows about and no one will ever know about.
Right.
I know that for a fact. So I try not to hold myself at court too often.
This is called Song of the Soul.
Okay.
So the warrior, keep in mind, warriors are trying to actually effect, they're trying to be this. But it's so fragile, it is so, it's a juxtaposition. You are a warrior, and at the same time you have to be gentle. Fierce, most certainly, in combat. But the mindset is that of a teacher in the martial arts. They use the word sensei. Song of the Soul. So if you can imagine, this is what makes a great fighter.
Mm.
It goes as follows.
Okay.
ego. Ego says, I am neither ego nor reason. I am neither mind nor thought. I cannot be heard or cast into thought, nor by sight or smell ever caught. In light and wind, I am not found, nor yet in earth and sky. Consciousness and joy incarnate, bliss of the blissful am I. I have no name, I have no life, I breathe no vital air. No elements have molded me, no bodily sheath is my lair. I have no speech, no hands, no feet, no means of evolution. Consciousness and joy am I, and bliss and disillusion. I cast aside hatred and passion, I conquer the delusion and greed. No touch of pride caressed me, so envy never did breed. Beyond all faith, past reach of wealth, past freedom, past desire, consciousness and joy am I, and bliss is my attire. Virtue and vice, no pleasure and pain are not my heritage. Nor sacred texts or offerings, nor prayers, nor pilgrimage. I'm neither food, nor eating, nor yet the eater am I. Consciousness and joy incarnate, bliss of the blissful am I. I have no misgivings of death. No chasms of race divides me. No parent ever called me child. No bond of birth did tie me. I am neither disciple nor master. I have no kin, no friend. Consciousness and joy am I, and merging with bliss is my end. Neither knowledgeable, knower, nor knowledge am I. Formless is my form. I dwell within the senses, but there is not my home. Ever serenely balanced, neither free nor bound, consciousness and joy am I, and bliss is where I am found.
All right, so that does it for our Best Of show. Again, what a year it was. It has been so much fun bringing this show to the worldwide leader. A dream come true, literally. A dream come true for yours truly. I can't believe that we've done 6 months. I can't believe the names that have stopped by. Most importantly, I want to thank the fighters. I want to thank the managers. I want to thank the promoters. I want to thank every single guest that's been on this show over the past 6 months and over the past 9 years. I always feel like it is an absolute honor and privilege that you give us your time. You don't have to come on the show. You could do anything you want with your Monday afternoon, but you give us 20, 30 minutes of your time each and every week. And I truly, truly appreciate that. I always get emotional as I head back home after the show because the fighters, the managers, the coaches, the promoters, always so gracious. And that's why I truly love covering this sport. So in particular, over the past 6 months, as we've tried to build something new, it has really meant a lot to me, all the big names that have signed up to do the show. So again, thank you so much. I hope that we get to do it for many more years. I want to thank, of course, all the listeners, all the viewers who stuck by us, who continue to support the show, who send in positive feedback, who send in, you know, positive thoughts. It really means the world. And, you know, I was worried that people would have a hard time finding us or would just change their viewing and listening habits. That hasn't been the case. In fact, it has blown me away. So thank you so much to all of you. And trust me, big things are coming for this particular show in 2019. Speaking of which, I want to remind you one more time. In exactly 7 days, December 31st, New Year's Eve, 9 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. Eastern, we will have our live New Year's Eve show. We'll be looking back at 2018. We'll be giving back awards. We'll be giving out awards to fighters. We will be having some special guests stop by. We will be joined by some winners, as someone's calling me right here. It's going to be a great time. And it's going to be live on ESPN2, my friends. This is a big deal for our show. This is our show growing up. This is our show on the telly. We'll never turn our back on the internet. But this is a very big deal. I'm very excited. Thank you very much to ESPN for giving us that opportunity. Thank you very much to all the people in the back who've been working on the show for the past 6 months, the new team. It is the best team that we've ever had. And I look forward to making the show bigger and better in 2019. Jake, speaking of new team members, Jake, who is now a big shot at ESPN. When I first met him, he was just like, you know, kind of down here. Now he's like all the way up here. It's unbelievable. Is the show to thank for his rise? I don't know. You know, you be the judge. But for now, you can hit my music. It has been a great year. It really has. But there's one more show left. December 31st, live on ESPN2. I can't wait. I'm counting down the days. It was fun, though, to look back at the past 6 months because we've had so many big names on the program. And what a wild year it was in mixed martial arts. Every single week. I never worried, like, what are we going to talk about this week? Or who are we going to talk to? Have we run out of topics or guests? Every single week. Just one dizzying week after the next. So it has been a lot of fun. I appreciate everyone who tuned in, not only this particular week, but over the past 6 months, who stuck by us and who have subscribed on iTunes or on Stitcher or our new YouTube page, youtube.com/ESPNMMA. It has been my honor. And so if you are celebrating the holidays, I hope you have a happy holiday season. I hope you enjoy a safe holiday season with your loved ones, family, and friends. Enjoy UFC 232, which is just a few days away. And then we will see you back right here on the telly December 31st, New Year's Eve, for our award show. I can't wait. Back next week. Same time, different place. Actually, different time. Until they say peace. I'm out of here.